Barnes has his sign. Biggio waiting. 1-2 on the way. And a fastball popped up. Shallow left. Verdugo is there with plenty of room. Makes the catch. And the Blue Jays will lose to the Red Sox 4-2 in the first game of this two-game series and extend their overall losing streak to 3 as they drop to 7-10.
Intercepted by the Canucks. They get it up on the right-wing side. His third time the charm. It is into the empty net. It'll be a shorthanded goal and a 6-3 win for the Vancouver Canucks.
I'm not concerned about our team. I believe in our group, and we played well enough to win here tonight. We played well enough to win the other night. We got to get better goaltending to give our group confidence here.
So what, a guy can't go away for a couple of days to do some errands without more catastrophe in Leafs land, a super soccer league starting up and totally collapsing. The Blue Jays doing their thing.
Jeez, falling off a cliff.
What?
Two Leaf losses.
There's snow on the ground, Ziggy. Snow is on the ground on April 21st. What is happening?
Pets' heads are falling off. Like, we got everything going right now.
Dogs are living with cats.
That was a rough day for Toronto sports. A rough night in net for Rick.
Oh.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what to say about three of the goals. Two and a half of the goals were not great. But I'm with Keith. Like, I don't know what you thought of the game, but I thought they played well. I thought they played well enough to win. I thought they should have had the Sunday game, and I said that on Monday. But yesterday, it was a decent start again. And everyone's talking about, okay, Vancouver gets lucky in the first one back after the long layoff. Now when they come back and play again, it's going to be an absolute blowout. Leafs are going to be upset and watch what happens. And it was the exact opposite. That Vancouver Canucks team doesn't give up. And all of a sudden, they're back in the mix of the playoffs.
But yes, okay, fair. And bravo, Vancouver. Get back to me in 4 weeks if they've kept this together. Ziggy, the Toronto Maple Leafs led the game in the third period last night. Whatever happened before that, they had a 3-2 lead in the third period. David Rittich spit the bit on the game-tying third goal just a handful of minutes after the Leafs had taken the lead. Then the old nemesis, the penalty kill, which has generally been good as the power play has been bad over the last 4 to 6 weeks. The old nemesis bites them. They give up the power play go-ahead goal. And then the fifth goal was worse than the game-tying goal. And boom, it's over. So none of it matters. None of it matters if you're going to get goaltending like that at a crucial time. The Maple Leafs led the game in the third period. When you take that 3-2 lead, when you score that goal, shorthanded, 3:10 into the third. That is supposed to be a backbreaker for an inferior team like the Vancouver Canucks. That's supposed to be it. And it wasn't.
Well, the Canucks had every reason to give up on Sunday, and then they had many reasons to give up yesterday, and they did it. Like, I have to give some kind of credit to them. Hopefully, at the end of the day, though, without him, they don't win either game. And without the subpar performances from Campbell and Rittich, the Leafs don't lose these games. This was really a goaltender battle at the end of the day. But what dominated it for me was that Vancouver had every chance to kind of give up on both of these, and they did it. And something like this can get a team going. Like, they win their games in hand, they're in the playoffs. They're in.
It's not even
2 weeks. It's 8 days and they're in. Like, they have to play almost every day, right?
Right.
So I mean, it's kind of crazy to think that the Canucks are back in the race, but it's two good games for them. And they're, how many long shifts did they have on Sunday? I was counting 3-minute plus shifts. It was a little bit better yesterday. They kind of got back on track, but the whole situation around Nylander, I thought was really interesting, how a guy's late for a meeting, you say he's not going to play, and then all of a sudden he's in. I'd love to know what happened in that meeting when they talked about it as a team, because something happened where he was allowed to play again, right? Yesterday in the morning, so on Monday, it was he missed the meeting, he's not playing. We found that out yesterday morning. We were talking about it. And then all of a sudden yesterday, he's back in the lineup. And there must have been some kind of discussion with the leadership group where it was a fine, or they kept it in-house. Something got said where he was put back in the lineup. And I'll give it to Nylander. That was his best game of the year. I don't think he's played better at all. That was it. But for me, that has to set the standard for him. Like, I need that every night. Look how much better John Tavares is. Look how good Tavares has been without Nylander. And now look how good he is once you get that kind of performance out of Willie. Tavares' game just gets better. I think a lot of this season is the fact that they've had issues some nights on just being on the same page, whether it's been against a good line, good team. But there have been nights this year where we get those games, right, where if Nylander's not scoring, what else is he doing for you? Last night's a good example. That's what I expect out of him every night. It's nothing too flashy. He's not going end-to-end, just a player that's protecting the puck, finding his teammates, playing with some energy, defensively responsible, and he's producing. And that's kind of that's what I need out of him. And other players on his line are going to get better as well. And if this team wants to be a tough two-line team to play against, which they are, they're going to need that kind of performance the rest of the way. That can't just be it can't be a light switch. It can't be one day on, one day off. We don't know what's going to happen in the playoffs. So I was surprised to see him back in the lineup.
Here's William Nylander on the situation about the missed meeting.
Yeah, I mean, I just missed a meeting that I wasn't aware of. So, I mean, a mistake happens like that, and I'm happy that I got to play today.
And here's Morgan Riley, one of the assistant alternate captains, on Nylander drawing into the lineup last night.
I mean, there's not much to tell. I think that, Will's a big part of our team, and we wanted him to play. And I thought, you know, he competed hard. And when he plays well, I think he's very elite. That's about all there is to it. You know, we dealt with that as a team and we moved past it.
So here's the balancing act, because I'll make my attempt to parse Morgan Riley's words. Again, you can call me crazy if you want. This Leafs lineup, it didn't have Ilya Mikheyev last night. And I know Ilya Mikheyev is not in the running for the Rocket Richard Trophy this year and probably never will be. But as we discussed last week, when Austin Matthews missed a game because of the flare-up of the wrist, when William Nylander was out of the lineup for COVID protocol purposes, this team gets thin really quickly. Look at the four lines as they were drawn up at the start of last night's game. And this, of course, includes William Nylander because he played. Matthews between Marner and Galchenyuk. Tavares between Nylander and a kid, Nick Robertson. Spezza between Simmons and Thornton. And then you have Kerfoot between Engvall and Brooks. And it's really just a hodgepodge, a potpourri, a mishmash in the bottom six right now, if you want to call it the bottom six. William Nylander needed to play to fill out this lineup because he's one of the more crucial players, and you're coming off an embarrassing loss against a Vancouver team that spent 3+ weeks not doing anything hockey-related because of COVID. So you had to try to get back into the W column last night and make something of the trip to BC. I think you handle it internally, yes, but I also think there are pressure points here. And this team might have outplayed Vancouver on Sunday, but they obviously were not happy with the result. And how are you going to take out, regardless of whether he is a consistent player, engagement night in and night out, how are you going to take out one of your highest skilled, best players on a night where you need to do some face saving? And because I think it's as simple as that.
No, because this isn't even about the win. When you have a guy late for a meeting or...
Okay, but how often does that happen?
It happens. It happens more than we know, except teams keep it in-house. It's a fine. It's a discussion. It's a team meeting.
Or a guy's got a little. A guy's got a nick or a bruise and doesn't play that night, and it really is because he missed a meeting, not because he's got something that they tell us is going on.
Yeah,
Will they cover it?
Well, the thing about it is the teams when they have a guy late is that you don't want to send the wrong message to the young guys, but he is one of the young guys. Like he is still. It's kind of crazy, but like, who are the young prospects that are coming up that are like, watch that, like that are playing right now?
Nick Robertson.
Robertson.
Pierre Engvall?
Not really.
Yeah.
Sandin, but there's guys in the taxi squad and there's guys in them with the Marlies that aren't even with the club right now traveling. They hear about when guys are late for meetings, like word spreads. This guy missed a pregame skate. This guy missed the meeting. They know. As an organization, when you have a guy that is not there, not present for these team meetings, team obligations, it ruins the culture in a sense. And I know you're sitting there listening, you're like, who cares if somebody's 2 minutes late for a meeting? Just let him catch up when he gets there. That's not the way professional sports teams are run. It really is a tight ship. No one's late for meetings. You have to get there early. I've been late for a practice one time, a couple minutes. And let me tell you, I thought my life was like over. Like it was a practice rink, middle of the season, played the night before. Guys usually stumble in an hour before you go on the ice. I slept through my alarm. We got home at 2-3 in the morning and then had to be back at the rink for 10 o'clock. And I slept it, and that's the only day I was late. I was lucky that it was the practice rink, and not many guys, like a couple guys saw me, but it wasn't like I had to walk in front of the whole team. But if Nylander missed a meeting where I think it was a power play meeting, and the fact that he's saying he didn't know there was a meeting, that's my guess, is that a special teams meeting that doesn't, like, we're creatures of habit, right? We want to know. We know exactly when the coach is going to come in prior to every game. We know when practice usually starts. We know when we have our stretch, our workouts. But when you're on the road, the power play's been bad the last month or so. You're in Vancouver. He hasn't been part of the lineup. Like, he's been out with COVID. You don't know. When you throw a meeting that's not scheduled consistently, yeah, maybe somebody didn't tell him, or they wrote on the board and he left already. Maybe he didn't see it. I think it was one of those situations. I don't know. I'm guessing here. I haven't been told any information, but that's what I think it was. I think at the end of the day, when you heard Morgan Riley talk about it, it didn't seem like a big deal to Morgan Riley, or the fact that what you just said, they'd rather him in the lineup, punish him in another way, because they're fighting for home ice right now. They want separation. They don't want to finish in third. And even outside of the North Division, you want the most points in case you get out of it.
Okay.
Right?
But let me take this down a different path. And perception. Sometimes perception matters. Now, perception might not matter inside that locker room. These guys know who their teammates are, what their teammates are about. The coaching staff knows these players. How we are talking about this, Siggy. Let's pretend he's a relatively new father, that John Tavares has a child, his little child is not feeling well or whatever, is up all night. And he's having to do some parenting at an ugly hour, 3 a.m. And he goes back to bed, the child settles, and he sleeps through his alarm, and he is late to the Ford Performance Center for practice that morning, and he's not on the ice until 10 minutes into the skate. And everybody looks and says, oh, there's the captain. How are we reacting to John Tavares's tardiness? And what are we saying about John Tavares? What are we saying if it happens to Austin Matthews? And are those reactions different than the reaction we have and the things we might suppose about a William Nylander?
If it's Austin Matthews, he gets sat out. Same as Nylander. Tavares, probably gets a pass. And I know the argument you're trying to make, and it's a good one. It depends who you are. And not even depends who you are, how good are you of a player you are, because I just said Matthews would get treated the same way as Nylander.
Is that age related, or is that reputation related, or what? Tavares is considered.
Whether you're a single guy, are you known to guy to go out? Are you married? Do you have kids? Like,
it all factors.
That all plays. It all factors. And is it fair? No, it's not fair. But that's just the way professional sports is. I shouldn't say it's hockey. That's the way hockey is. The NHL. That's the culture. Like it, and that's. I mean, it's similar in a lot of different industries, though. If you're someone who's been there a long time, you can get your leashes a little bit longer. Like, you can get away with more things. And that's life. Like, is it fair? No, I don't think it's fair at all. Everyone should be treated the same. But I kind of compare it to a guy that makes a mistake. You know, if you're Adam Brooks last night and you give a puck up in the neutral zone, you're not going back on the ice the rest of the game. But if you're Nylander or Matthews, probably give up three pucks each shift in the neutral zone. You're going to go back out there. So, yeah, is it fair in the sense of the fact that it's Nylander? You know, if this was Tavares or, you know, I'm trying to go, you know, Jake Muzzin. Like, I don't think they're sitting out. But if you're a young guy and you're single and, you know, you don't have a family, yeah, you get treated like the kid. Like, that's the way it is. I haven't known of it any different when I played or, you know, post career, and it isn't fair. But the fact that they put him back in, I think it almost looks worse now. Like, now it's like, well, what are you doing? Like, you sit the guy out or not? And I think the only reason we know about it is because he was on the practice squad. He had a different jersey. So people were going to find out about what actually happened. Like, you couldn't bury what happened, right?
Yeah. And the moment you're asked about it and you go public with it, and Sheldon Keefe did on the off day, well, now everybody's just waiting for the result, and they're going to judge that result. Like, to your point, Siggy, they didn't keep it in house. They didn't keep it in house. Oh, don't make so much of this. So why does the media always make so much of it? We didn't force William Nylander to be late for something, and we did not make the Toronto Maple Leafs volunteer that information. We didn't stick him in an extra shirt for practice. None of that happened, but we happened to notice things. And it's going to be a talking point in this town, as is the goaltending. Jason in Toronto, bottom line is this team won't go anywhere with the goaltending they have right now. Bring in Vevalainen. He's calling for Veini Vevalainen, and I know he did that because I've been off for 2 days, and he wants to see if I can still say the name. Say the name. I did. Sheldon Keefe, not pulling any punches.
Yeah, I'm concerned about our goaltending, obviously. You know, we got to get that sorted out, but I'm not concerned about our team. I believe in our group, and we played well enough to win here tonight. We played well enough to win the other night. You know, but we got to get better goaltending to give our group confidence here.
All right, Sheldon, I take your point, but I'm gonna follow up here. What about Frederik Andersen?
Well, I think we've talked enough about Fred's situation. You guys all know that he's making progress, but we don't know when he's going to return to play. Jack Campbell's played outstanding hockey for us this season. He'll go back in that next game, and I know he's a better goaltender than he's played of late. He's shown that for us, and he's going to get a chance to go in and play a big game, and our group absolutely believes in him.
What have we said on this show, Ziggy? You know, I have felt all along that ultimately this will circle back to Frederik Andersen. And whenever it is Freddie gets his chance, how far this team goes in the playoffs will depend on the play of Frederik Andersen.
Isn't it funny, though? Like,
I'm not saying Leafs fans shouldn't be scared. I'm just saying be careful who you think the savior is.
I agree. And this is what have I said? Four-game winning streak, five. I'm like, just cool it. I wanted Campbell to play more games. People called me crazy. No, Anderson's a starter. He's our guy. Campbell can't, we don't want Campbell coming in. I said, just give him more than the back-to-backs. Then all of a sudden, four wins in a row, five, six. And then people are like, Freddie who? Like, what do you mean? I'm done with Anderson.
Yeah, it's a great story. Jack's story is a great story, 11-0. But
I'm going to hammer this point. When you have a guy that takes the workload that Freddie Anderson takes, it's a reliable goaltender. Forget about whether he's had bad stretches this year or last year. He hasn't had his game in the last 12 months. However you want to evaluate it, when you have a guy that comes and logs those amount of games and is a reliable goaltender, yes, Freddie is reliable. He gives up the odd one we don't like, and he hasn't won a playoff series, but he's up there in the league for guys you can rely upon. And when a guy like that is playing decent, he gives you a chance to win. And the fact that he's been playing injured, I think you have to take that into consideration. So Campbell, great story. He hasn't been a starter. And this is what I was worried about when he went on the run. And it's happened. But you're not going to win every game. It's not like Campbell all of a sudden is just this awful goaltender. He hasn't flipped a switch. He's just a guy that you have bad stretches and you have bad games. The hard part is that he won 11 in a row. So you're expecting some version of that every night. And this is out of a guy that hasn't been a starter. Then you have Riddick come in from Calgary. Yeah, he's all excited to be here. In his first game, he played well and came in relief the second time and played really well. And then yesterday, two of those goals can't happen. Another one got deflected. I thought he should have got a glove on it in the second, the Hughes goal. But the two in the third, like, I don't even know what... Like, what is that? One was going wide. One, the Hoglander one, he kind of fanned on it, went five hole. Like,
but that can't happen when you score a shorthanded goal. When you score a shorthanded goal to take the lead 3 minutes into the third period against an inferior team, that's got to be it.
Yeah, you have to lock it up.
Lock it up. That's it. And we can't possibly know whether they would have with just average goaltending, but we can say that they would have. They should have. They've outplayed the Canucks. They came away with one of a possible 4 points. David Riddick spit the bit last night. That's it. That's it. And he spit the bit at a completely inopportune time. And we're not, I am convinced now, Ziggy, what's the date? What is it? 21st? 21st. Figures the day after 420. I can't remember anything. But it's April 21st. We are not going to have a solution to this conversation in time for the start of the playoffs. I'm telling you right now, you know this. You can't argue this point. Game one against whoever it is, that's what we're going to be worried about. Unless this team suffers a run of injuries that freaks us the hell out, will the goaltending hold up is the question of the day when the playoffs start. I don't think there's anything any of these guys can do. Freddie, who's on LTIR, Jack Campbell, David Riddick. I don't think there's anything these guys can do between now and then to completely quell our concerns about the state of this team's goaltending, and then it's going to be finger-crossing time come the postseason.
Yeah, and this is not the situation you want to be in. At this point of the season, you want your starting goaltender locked up. You want your pairings who've been juggled last couple games now. You want that solidified. You want your lines locked up, and the Leafs don't have any of it. The fact that they've played well enough to win the last couple games with all this stuff going on, Hyman injured, Freddie gone, Campbell not the same goaltender he was in 11-0, you're juggling like pairings. They have all this stuff going on, and it's still a pretty good game. Like, that's the bright spot with this team, is that they're still playing a decent game, right? It's not, the wheels haven't fallen off. Is it where you want to be going into the playoffs? No, you're fine-tuning at this point.
Gord Stellick called Sunday's game the David Ayers game. I actually think last night's game, because the adrenaline should really have worn off for Vancouver, right? And Sunday night was their return to play. Last night, that was the game that the Leafs shouldn't have just won, but dominated, and the scoreboard should have reflected it. They didn't. We'll get Gord's thoughts on the game last night, the Nylander situation, where we go with the goaltending from here. Gord Stellick, he won't hold back. Next. This is... Take your text to 590-590. Things that lasted longer than this European Super League of soccer.
I wonder what happened. It was like 12 teams. It was getting ready to go. You think like, is like FIFA that powerful where it was like,
or UEFA either? Yeah. Well,
you want, but remember FIFA was like, hey, if you want to go and play in this new Super League, you're not allowed to play in the World Cup. Like if you're a player, would that affect, like if I'm a player, that's a tough call, well, right? Cause like, I don't think I go in the Super League. Like, well, I don't think like if what the World Cup means to soccer players and what that would mean to me, I don't think there's no amount of money if you want kept me out of the World Cup that I would want to join this new Super League that may take off or may not. Like, we don't know, right?
Right. And James Sharman will join us in the 7 o'clock hour. I think that's one of the questions. Was this strictly the work of the billionaire owners of these teams? How much involvement, how much awareness? I mean, they would have had to have some level of awareness, but how much involvement or awareness did the actual players have of what was going on here? There's just, and everything is intertwined over there. It's interesting though, Ziggy. I mean, when you think about some of the owners of these teams, John Henry is the principal owner of the Boston Red Sox. He owns Liverpool. The Glazer family, the late Malcolm Glazer, purchased the Tampa Bay Buccaneers about a quarter of a century ago. He's passed away. The Buccaneers, though, are still owned by the Glazer family. Well, they own Manchester United. These are typically foreign billionaires who don't have a care or a concern for the constituents, the people who cheer for these teams. And I think there's a broader discussion to have, and we can have it a little bit later on in the show, about the importance of rivalries. Like, what if somebody walked in today and said the Toronto Maple Leafs are moving to another league or the Montreal Canadiens are moving to another league such that the Leafs and the Habs will never play another game against each other? We would freak out. The Montreal Canadiens are as important to the Leafs-Habs rivalry as the Leafs are. As much as we love the Leafs and don't like the Habs, without the Habs, we can't have the love and the hate. So if I'm a Spurs fan, a Tottenham Hotspur fan, and I'm never going to play West Ham United again because I'm in this Super League, well, that sucks, you know. So there's so many levels to this, and we'll get into it with James Sharman and pick his brain about why this trial balloon, at the very least, was floated so quickly and then had the pin stuck in it. Now, Gord Stellick was on fire on Monday morning, not literally, but I'm not so sure about whether or not he's actually literally on fire this morning. Are you okay, Gord?
Well, I'm good, I'm not okay in that sense. But I, you know, my answer to the questions are LeBron James, the decision, the XFL when those two guys got themselves hurt at the start of the first game, and Fabian Brunstrom. Those are three things that lasted as long as a Super League. How about
Fabian,
that? The winner prize.
Fabian Brunstrom, the great pursuit of Fabian Brunstrom.
That's right.
Was big. Almost
I played with him in the minors, and he was with the Marlies. Fabian Brunstrom.
Yeah, I remember that.
Great.
Yeah.
Scored a hat trick. His first NHL game. Scored a hat trick.
That
actually great. Actually, great guy. Great guy. One of the best.
So is my mom.
Okay. All right. I came back to work on the right day. Okay. Yeah. So, Gord, I listened, and I'm not going to lie and say that I was awake at 6:30 on Monday morning, but I did listen back to your guest spot on Monday morning with George and Siggy here on Leadoff, and you compared the loss Sunday night in Vancouver to the David Ayers game, and that got me thinking on that day. I can't prove it, but it got me thinking on that day that actually last night's game, Tuesday's game, was bigger for the Maple Leafs, because you could argue, even though the Leafs outplayed Vancouver on Sunday, that the Canucks, it was their first game back on the ice in more than 3 weeks. Everything that they'd been through, they'd have some push, they'd have some grit, they'd have some energy, they'd find a way to push through. But that second game is where the adrenaline is supposed to wear off, where your legs are supposed to catch up to you just a little bit. And while the Leafs did have a third period lead for a couple of minutes last night, they end up losing this game because of some shoddy goaltending. To me, last night's loss is far more embarrassing than Sunday's loss.
Bingo. Bingo. I'll tell you. So Elliot Friedman mentioned the stat that the Sunday night game, Vancouver was the biggest underdog home team in prop betting since 2006. Okay, we're talking 15 years ago. So, you blow that game. And then there's that great, it's the Sound of Music story, the Canucks coming over the hill singing with Julie Andrews, whatever, you know, and wow, what a great story. Jimmy Vesey, the guy that got claimed on waiver, said, wow, this is the greatest game I've ever been involved, against his old team. So last night, it's easy to blame the goaltending, okay? And the goaltending was terrible the last half of the game. But you know what? You got to make statements sometime. And their statement was, Baskin-Robbins has 33 flavors and we're getting vanilla, okay? And that was their statement when you went out to make a statement game. I am more pissed off about this one than the previous six-game losing streak back then. You're supposed to be making statements that you're the best team in the division. You're ready to go in the playoffs in that vein. And you're now showing that against a team that's been ravaged by COVID, was out for about a month, and they play more inspired hockey than you by and large. So you can talk about the goaltending, the great goaltending Vancouver got and all that. This was inexcusable.
I don't think anyone's going to doubt that Nylander had one of his best games of the season. Were you surprised, Gord, to see him in the lineup after all that happened the last couple days, late for a meeting, not going to play, we're dealing with it, and then magically he's in?
Well, you know, it must have been a tough one for Sheldon Keefe, because once you knew Hyman was out, then you found out Mikheyev, he probably said, you know, my chances are, he started looking at the stats, and again, you know, Ziggy, secondary scoring, Kerfoot, Simmons, Thornton, you know, you name it. Mm-hmm. It just ain't happening. And it didn't happen last year in the bubble, and it didn't happen last year during the regular season. So all of a sudden, this to me has become the biggest concern. And I think he felt that your best chance to win, again, an important game to win last night, was having Nylander in. So, you know, I'm, you know, again, Ziggy, you know, behind the scenes, how stuff gets handled is really important. And I don't think his teammates would think it's a federal case and look badly on Sheldon Keefe about it. I think they would appreciate that they really needed to win that game. And Nylander was one of the guys that, along with John Tavares, were two of the players that really did their utmost to do that.
Well, and Gord, I take Nylander at his word that he just either wasn't aware of the meeting or wasn't aware of the timing of the meeting, because meetings these days involve powering up your laptop and typing nobody needs to type in www anymore, but just typing in zoom.com and hitting click, and then you're poof in the meeting.
Yeah.
So you can't be late for a meeting unless you don't know the actual time of the meeting. So I take William at his word, for better or worse.
Yeah, and also they can't go out. So nobody's out on the town. I mean, they're in these small little bubble environments when they're on the road. It's got to be a little bit boring, actually. So and I think Sheldon Keefe, you know, did as well. It's just that you kind of go, geez, you know, this was a guy that had a little bit of a slip up. About COVID, maybe an innocent one, but he basically put himself in peril. So he put the team in peril by being out of the lineup. So I didn't, you know, so I'm with you, Scott, that he, you know, just kind of said that, ah, man, you know, as far as transgression goes, we have to just show a little bit of common sense.
Look,
that way.
I have no examples. I have no proof. But, Gord, you and I mean, we're about 100 years old combined. If you think that not one of these guys has gone out against the grain, I got a bridge in Monaco to sell you. I'm not saying that's what happened here. I don't know. But I have a hard time believing that this has been all kept locked.
Well, you know, I don't disagree. He's just the one that we've known about publicly. But
right.
Then on the flip side, Scott, is the Washington Capitals were the first team to get caught that way, and so to speak, and they lost four of their best players, and they went out and were winning. So that's the other part, is part of being, you know, like, hey, if this is the Leafs adding Brian Boyle and this is their first playoff in years against the Washington Capitals and whoopee geez bang, you know, all these kids are going to get playoff experience, that's one thing. This is supposed to be a really good or great team. Okay, that is my impression. That's what I'm predicating everything on. So, you know, just problematically right now, without Nylander, whoever in the lineup, you got to step up because injuries are part of the game. Bad officiating is part of the game. Hot goaltending against you is part of the game. So, you know, that is more my concern. But you're right about it. To say, yeah, there's been anybody and any people in society, you're right, that are just kind of coming close and, you know, pushing it as far as they can go compared to whatever sanctions are in place.
I know we've talked a lot about Robertson and what he brings to the team, and he still has those rookie mistakes. We talked about it Monday and how, you know, he's a shooter. He brings energy, but falling down all over the place, some giveaways. But when you watch him, do you not see him as part of this lineup in the playoffs if Hyman can't come back? Like, do you not have to add a guy like that into your forward group?
Boy, how about his brother? 14th goal last night, Jason Robertson with the
really
Dallas
good.
Stars. What a pleasant surprise. But to answer your question, first of all, when you say Hyman not in the playoffs, I mean, I really hope that's accurate. The best piece of news I heard the last couple of days that despite how it looked initially, that he's looked to, you know, 2 or so weeks out of the lineup. That would be huge because he's a guy you're really, really going to need. But, you know, Nick, Ziggy, I'm thinking Nick Alberga. Ziggy, you look at the spice that Nick Robertson adds, and you're right. Like, I mean, all these guys bring something different. Sabourin's an extreme one if you're going to need toughness, for example. The veterans, they really got to find a kind of role like they did early on that is comfortable for Simmons and Thornton and that they can contribute a bit more. And, you know, other guys, whether it's Engvall, Mikheyev, who's hurt right now, and Kerfoot, and on and on and on, you know, guys, this is step up time and they're really not stepping up. And I agree. I think Nick Robertson in his own way is despite the one game where he appeared that his skates weren't sharp and right, that he fell so often, but he's got that ability. I mean, it's hard to score goals in the National Hockey League. And you're seeing that with a lot of the third and fourth line Leafs. And this guy appears to have that ability.
With Gord Stellick on leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, here's Sheldon Keefe on the state of the goaltending.
Yeah, I'm concerned about our goaltending, obviously. You know, we got to get that sorted out, but I'm not concerned about our team. I believe in our group, and we played well enough to win here tonight. We played well enough to win the other night. You know, but we got to get better goaltending to give our group confidence here.
So, Gord, Sheldon would go on to say he doesn't want to talk about Freddie Anderson anymore. That's been talked about ad nauseum. They're waiting for Freddie to tell them he's good to go. I don't think LTIR has anything to do with it. Jack Campbell, the shine has come off just a little bit. David Rittich was awful, and that is being diplomatic in the third period, cost him the game last night. I don't see a way, Gord. Maybe you do, and that's what I'm hoping to hear, but I don't think you do. I don't see a way where the state of this team's goaltending is not the hot topic on the morning of game one of the first round of the playoffs. It's going to be everything.
Well, we'll see how the rest of the regular season goes, but I can't disagree with you right now. And, you know, and first of all, I think in a lot of ways, Sheldon Keefe is taking a little pressure off the team. Cause I'm sorry. They, to me, if you're playing well enough to win, particularly the last game, you got to win the sucker. Okay. I know there was a soft goal by Campbell to make it 2-1, but I don't think there's any coincidence that, you know, Dermott was one of the guys not playing last night because the Dermott and Bogosian jumped in trying to make it 3-0, like at Friday night pickup hockey where you just got to understand the situation. You had a Vancouver team that really wasn't getting many chances the other way, and you let them off the mat, and then you let them take control of the game. So I think in some ways he's softening a bit. The goaltending, I give Kyle Dubas credit for adding Jack Campbell. I give Kyle Dubas credit this year for adding David Rittich. Rittich has played well for the Leafs beyond last night, played well against them once in a game for Calgary. So depth-wise now, which they never used to have, Scott and Ziggy, was the depth, right? It was Freddie or nothing. So depth-wise, they appear to have three different options, which is a big difference from other years. But if none of the three are going, right, you know, what's the difference? So I've got to believe that there's going to be more of Jack Campbell that we saw prior to the last three games and Rittich And again, if Freddie ends up being healthy and able to play, you got to believe you're going to get solid playoff goaltending, because that's been a problem in the past. And they made decisions, they made moves to alleviate that. But you're right. Wow. If they go out playing like they did these last two games against Vancouver, like vanilla last night, and with vanilla goaltending, it's going to be a long summer.
Thanks for this, Gord. We'll talk again on, I presume, on Friday after tomorrow night's game in Winnipeg. Should be good. Good test for these guys.
Yeah, we'll carry up the Fabian Brunstrom tribute as well. We'll keep it going.
Things that lasted longer than the Europe Super League. Discussions about Fabian Brunstrom. Excellent. All right, Gord. Love it.
See you, man.
Gord Stellick, the co-host with Nick Alberga of Leafs Nation pre and post here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
I know we have to go, but I was traveling through Europe a couple years ago and actually met Brunstrom when I was I'm trying to think of what town I was in. I was in Denmark.
hook the listener.
Okay.
Hook the listener.
I'll get the name of the city.
What did Ziggy get up to with Fabian Brunstrom on his National Lampoon's European vacation? We'll get to that. The Blue Jays, they lose in Boston. There's some concern here. We'll get to that coming up. Your text to 590-590, things that lasted longer than the European Super League. Brendan and Barry, the Leafs' third period lead last night.
Yeah.
Jason in Toronto backfilling with that text as well. So, but he's on the Leafs, Zig. Everybody's on the Leafs. Man, Vancouver's been a tough trip for them this year. Remember they smoked the Canucks in three straight home games? But they've gone west twice and not looked good.
Yeah, four in a row. But it's been hot goaltenders they ran into. Demko and Holpe. Like, I say, you want how good you play. You want to know how important goaltending is? Look at these four games versus the Canucks.
Right.
That's a perfect example.
And look at David Riddick's play in the third period last night. I mean, there's you can't put lipstick on that pig. It's ugly. It was ugly. Adam Van Cooverton is a former Olympian, a former medalist in kayaking. He is now the parliamentary secretary for sport, the MP for Milton. And he will join us late in the 7 o'clock hour to discuss the importance of sport through these pandemic times. And the government has announced some funding to encourage inclusive and accessible sporting ventures at the community level. So we'll talk to Adam about that, but also get into his Olympic experiences, what he remembers, and we'll try to get him as a former athlete to put himself into the shoes of a potential 2021 Tokyo athlete. What would it be like to be training for something that you're not entirely sure is going to happen? James Sharman on the European Soccer League, the Super League, how briefly we knew ye. This is just the best story. The best story ever. Hugh will jump in. We'll get back into the Maple Leafs. I got concerns about the Blue Jays, even though some guys are getting healthy. We'll discuss that. And the top golfers, a $40 million pot? You can miss a cut and get a payday? How do we get in on that action? Those topics and more in Hour 2 of Leadoff. Taking your text to 590-590, things that lasted longer than the European Super League. Dan and Milton. Shorter than a Danny Jansen hitting streak.
Boom!
That one's gonna hurt.
There's a lot of cheap shots coming on the text
line. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I would have said Roots Air, and you looked at me like, what? And I'm like, exactly.
Doug in Brantford lasted longer than lasted longer than the Rogers phone outage. It was a tough day on Monday. I was off. Yeah. My phone didn't work.
Tough one. Got to walk that one off.
All the people who wanted to call me couldn't reach me.
Well, apparently that's what the Nylander thing was about. That's a rumor I'm hearing. Is he didn't get the message.
Oh.
But everybody else did.
I mean, I don't know. I know. Here's the thing. Where are you without, like, Wi-Fi was still working.
Wi-Fi was working. Yep.
Yeah, like my Rogers Ignite at home, my TV, my internet, everything was good. Like, I didn't notice. And then I was even talking to people on the phone being like, well, I would call you if I could. And I'm like, call you if you could. Call me on FaceTime audio. And there's a lot of people with Rogers that didn't know you could call on FaceTime audio when you're, if you don't have reception.
What is that?
Yeah.
I have no idea.
So, you know, like when you have FaceTime on your phone, right, you don't need to FaceTime a person. Right, and you can just do an audio call.
There's a call feature on WhatsApp, yes, I think, as well. Right?
Yep. Similar kind of thing. Exactly. So you have that. But I think a lot of people didn't know you could call FaceTime audio because I had it happen a couple times.
The thing is, if you're out of the house, and I know none of us are technically supposed to be right now. But
was Willie on a walk? Like, where was he? Why wasn't he in his hotel? Like, where was he?
Where was Willie wandering on his walk? Was he in Stanley Park? Something like that?
He's right there. Can I weigh in on this, by the way? I heard you guys talking about this whole thing.
Well, you didn't really present us with an option, when you ask like that. If we say no, we're jerks.
It's called the conversational wedge. I'm going to drive it in here right now. Okay. So, Willie Nylander misses the meeting on Monday. Now, I don't have any proof of this, but I've been around the block a couple of times. This is just my opinion. I don't think that's the first time he's missed a meeting, because I'll tell you why. Because Coach Sheldon Keefe said he missed a meeting. Coaches don't do that unless they want to shame the guy in front of the media. Sheldon Keefe could have easily have said, you know what? He's just getting back from COVID. He's not feeling 100% yet in terms of his cardio. So we're going to give him the night off.
Right, but to follow,
he didn't do that. He said he missed a meeting.
Okay, so he wants
the media to know that.
So the follow up point is then, what was Sheldon Keefe's intention at the time? Because this was on the off day that he shared this with everybody.
To light a fire under him,
or was his intention not to play him? And then the leadership group of the team said, "Oh, wait a minute," or the Hyman diagnosis, they knew they weren't going to have Hyman Tuesday night on Monday morning. I mean, Sunday night's injury was clear enough. But the Hyman diagnosis comes in, McKayev's not available. Suddenly you're looking at your roster going, geez, we're thin.
But, okay, so if the leadership then approached the coach to say, come on, let him play, that to me, that's an even bigger issue. The coach has to be able to make that decision independently of anybody else on the team.
Yeah, but you have to be able... I mean, we're digressing, sure, far down a rabbit hole here, not entirely with the knowledge of what happened, but the leadership group should be able to approach the coach and say, here's what we're thinking. And the coach has to be allowed to consider that. And if he ends up convinced by said leadership group that that's the right way to go, that doesn't make the coach weak.
Doesn't make the coach weak unless he stated that, we're probably going to sit him out tomorrow, which is what he said. So,
He was pissed.
We're not happy on this one, but that again, just my opinion based on no inside knowledge other than I've been around the block a few times covering sports teams. So that's it.
Yeah, I was surprised to see him go in. I mean, that would have been, it's tough for Sheldon Keefe. Like, I think that's the toughest person, like this whole situation. You step up to the media, you say one thing, and then you have to backtrack and go the other
way.
I think that's really hard on the coach. And that must have just been, that must have been the whole leadership group. That wasn't just Austin Matthews or Morgan Riley stepping up.
If that's indeed what happened.
Yeah, that's a handful of guys that have gotten together, gone to the coaching staff and said, hey, this totally wasn't fair. He really didn't know about it. We're out. We don't, you know, he doesn't deserve to be sat out. Or it's the other thing. What I mean, Gord Stellick on earlier, he was saying that, you know, they don't have Mikheyev. They don't have Hyman, right? Depleted. They don't have secondary scoring right now. We need Nylander in to have a chance to win tonight. Like I think it's
so your hammer. Without Willie Nylander, your hammer and tong to beat the Vancouver Canucks.
Well, apparently, yeah. With him.
Yeah, you're right. Apparently, they are. Yes, which yeah. again is a conversation right. that's right. even and more disturbing.
The spaghetti strainer and goal in the third period didn't help very much. I mean, God, that you score. I'll go to my grave believing this. You are in a 2-2 game against an inferior team. You score a shorthanded goal early in the third period. That's it.
You got to lock Lights that out. Baby down.
Lights out.
Gordon said it. Inexcusable last
we
night.
We can't sit here and say with any certainty that they would have locked it down with simply average goaltending. But I can tell you this. They didn't lock it down with whatever the hell that was. I mean.
It was bad.
Bad. By the way, what's going on outside? I can see the window in Silent Vic and Hayden's room.
Yeah.
It wasn't bad when we drove into work. It's
speak for yourself. It was bad when I came in this morning. Yeah.
Yeah, oh, but you terrible. You live out in Etobicoke though. Yeah, apparently Etobicoke. They were getting hitting harder than but it is a winter wonderland on April 21st.
And you can't go anywhere, but there is a travel advisory.
Yes. yes, the travel advisory is don't travel. Please. Don't walk up to the corner store if you can help it. Marcus Semien wants you to know there's a lot of baseball left.
It's early. You know, everybody's trying to see how the league attacks them. You know, we're starting to face some division opponents, and we're seeing some trends that I'm sure we will learn from during this tough stretch. But, of course, we all want to be hot at the same time. That's going to be really fun when that happens. But, you know, right now, we're not quite there yet.
So I'm over the Marcus Semien in the leadoff spot experience.
To hit like a buck.
One for 17. One for 17 leading off games.
Who didn't want him there? Who didn't want him there?
Okay, who do you want? Kevin Bishop?
I'm just saying. I didn't want.
Who do you want?
Give him a shot. Has he had a shot this year?
He hasn't had a shot this year. No, he hasn't had a shot.
Throw a player. Give him some responsibility. I know you want him further down the lineup. I want him hitting first. And I'm not saying I want him there the whole year. I'm just saying give him 10 games, see what he can do, and then I'll make a decision.
I'll tell you what, George Springer, they're saying he's probably back this weekend in Tampa Bay. I'm going to be holding my breath the entire weekend because that's the worst playing surface in Major League Baseball down there at Tropicana Field. This guy's had an oblique and had a quad.
Yeah.
That's cement with carpet over top of it. That is as old school. Maybe they've changed the playing surface in the last year or two.
But it's still not going to be as good as grass.
That's as old school a setup as anything. They need him back. They need Teoscar Hernandez back in the middle of that order. Grichuk hit the home run last night, but he has started to regress. This team right now has Bo Bichette and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. as the two guys you can count on. And it was some, we can get into the weeds here. Eighth inning last night, you're trailing in the ball game. You have, and when I say you, I'm not talking about Charlie Montoyo himself. I think that this is a group thing, but stay with me on this. And if, because I'm not sure I'm going to be able to stay with myself. The 8-9 hitters last night were the backup catcher, Alejandro Kirk, the designated hitter, and Danny Jansen batting ninth. So you have determined that your backup catcher is a good enough hitter that you want him in the lineup even when he's not catching.
Okay.
Yet he's not a good enough hitter to hit in the eighth inning against Adam Ottavino, granted a right-hander with a tough breaking ball, tough slider, but he's not a good enough hitter to hit against Adam Ottavino in the eighth inning, such that you would pinch hit a left-handed hitter with 30 career Major League Baseball plate appearances to his name, eliminating Alejandro Kirk's availability for the remainder of the night, and leaving Danny Jansen in a crucial spot in the lineup in the eighth inning. You're removing Kirk, but keeping Jansen. Danny Jansen cannot hit.
Danny Jansen is hitting .065.
It's the galaxy brain stuff that drives me nuts. I understand you want to get Josh Palacios, the left-handed bat, into the lineup at some point. If you pinch hit Palacios for Jansen and you have to put Kirk in at catcher, having been the DH, you lose the DH spot. And the pitcher has to hit in the nine hole where Jansen was. I understand the ramifications of that, but I mean, and we're getting nitpicky because this team just isn't performing.
No.
Ryu did not have a good fourth inning. It blew up on him.
They had four hits.
But they don't have the offense right now to overcome this stuff. And they cannot get George Springer and Teoscar Hernandez back soon enough, to say nothing of all the pitching that they're missing, including a lot of their high-leverage relievers. We'll get back into this. Dan Shulman will join us next hour. Things that lasted longer than the European Super League of soccer. Allison in Toronto, the Super League lasted longer than spring in Toronto. Adam from Muskoka cut a self-deprecating joke about how long he lasts, and apparently not as long as the European Soccer League. You can fill in the blanks there. Cole in Stainer says lasted longer than Pablo Sandoval's belt. That's a good one. Cole and Stainer, you're well leading done. The pack this morning. James Sharman is the host of the Footy Prime podcast, and he is here to help us figure out just what the heck went wrong. When all the billionaires got together and saw the revolt, they pivoted and turned the other way. Mr. Sharman, a proper good morning to you, sir. How are you?
Good morning, fellas. Good to speak to you. Yeah, I'm feeling good this morning compared to perhaps this time yesterday. So all in the end has worked out just fine.
Okay, so the notion of a super league of the elite and richest European football clubs is not new, and yet it was, for lack of a better way to put it, at least publicly, dumped in our lap on the weekend, and then by last night, it's completely and totally exploded. It feels, James, like an oversimplification to suggest that a bunch of foreign billionaires ignorantly went ahead with something that was going to piss off the proletariat, the fans of these teams, and then pivoted the moment that they realized, oh, everybody's mad at us. But is that what happened here? Or is there far deeper and potentially even more sinister stuff at play?
No, I think you're bang on there. I mean, this was ignorance and this was naivety. They took up a fight against a sporting culture that was far greater, far more ingrained in these nations than they thought. It's sadly typical, I guess, of the way they run their clubs. It's not about the fans. It's about being a cash box for themselves. But you are right. I mean, this thing's been mentioned. I've been covering the sport for two decades, and I've been, you know, in the murmurings, in the backgrounds, that there's been this threat of a Super League for a long time, pretty much through those entire two decades. And at times it's gathered steam as they try to leverage more out of UEFA and more out of FIFA, that the sport's governing bodies. And fairly so, in that these clubs, the 12 clubs mentioned, pretty much are the biggest clubs in the world. And they are the driving force commercially and financially for these leagues and for UEFA. So they think they should get more of the pot. But this one came out of nowhere when it actually happened, to the point where even the players and the managers at these clubs were unaware this was happening until Sunday. And they were the ones who had to face it full on in front of the cameras while these billionaires hid in their offices and just waited for the fallout. So incredible naivety and ignorance. In the end, the right things happen, but this is all about money. It's about greed. I'm sure they'll try and swing it, saying we just misread the room, we misread the situation. But I can't imagine they hadn't discussed what this fallout might be. That is what, to me, is just so stunning. These are, you know, these aren't stupid men. These are intelligent men, you know, very wealthy men with teams around them, with PR teams, JP Morgan, the biggest bank in the States, involved. surely someone would have said, then, you know what, this is a bit of a gamble. You're going to upset a lot of people, but I guess that didn't happen.
Aren't most of these teams, the 12 teams that were listed, you know, Arsenal, Chelsea, Liverpool, Man City, Man U, weren't they, like, aren't all of them American-backed owners? And does that have anything to do with the fact that American ownership would be different than European ownership of these teams?
Yes, exactly. Most of them are. I mean, there's some Russians that own the Middle Eastern, like Abu Dhabi, the royal family own Man City. But the driving force behind this Super League was by the American owners, the Glazers in United, the Henrys in Liverpool, Cronkies in Arsenal. And certainly they want cost certainty, right? And for all the warts around North American sports and no sports system's perfect, there is, generally speaking, cost certainty with no relegation, no promotion. You've got a seat at the table. You're not going anywhere no matter how poorly you perform. So that's what they wanted. There's now reports that they hope to expand even beyond this across the world to Asia, to South America. Who knows, maybe North America as well at some point, and have other super leagues. So this was just the beginning, the first step, get the big fish, the European model, changed over to more of a North American model. So that's what they wanted. And they didn't realize that 100 years of history of playing in a certain system, and that is promotion relegation, that the football pyramid, they call it, where it's an open competition. There's always hope for every club, no matter how big or how small you are. There's hope that one day you can rise and become elite, unlike the North American model. They misread that completely.
With James Sharman, the six Premier League clubs involved, Arsenal, Chelsea, Liverpool, Man City, Man U, and the Spurs, Tottenham, all withdrew yesterday. Inter Milan out of Italy withdrew today, as did Atletico Madrid out of Spain. Juventus, Milan, Barcelona, Real Madrid are the hangers-on at this point, James. We were talking a little bit earlier about rivalries, right? So trying to relate this to our experience here in Toronto. If I'm a Spurs fan, or if I'm a West Ham United fan, a pretty big rivalry there, right, in the London area. If I were to be told that the Toronto Maple Leafs were leaving to join some other renegade league, or the Montreal Canadiens for that matter, we're joining another renegade league, and those two hockey teams, the Leafs and the Habs, would never play each other again, I'd be beside myself. It's a reminder that the rival that you hate is as important as your favorite team to said rivalry. And part of that is what's happened here, right? I mean, it has completely lost the grassroots flavor. Tottenham's never going to play 100%. West Ham again. That's not good enough.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right. And I think part of the cynicism around this whole concept was they didn't care about the legacy fans, right? So the legacy fans are the fans like you and I, who are hockey fans, soccer fans, who have watched our teams through generations of our families. We love sport, and that's nurtured those rivalries within the fan base. That's great. They didn't care about those fans. They were purely building for a future fan base. This is a 23-year deal, guys, 23 years. And they would have taken a bit of a hit early on, but their plan was to get new fans who didn't understand the legacy of these teams. So to hell with West Ham, to hell with the Montreal Canadiens. This is all about new fans and new rivalries. These manicured and false rivalries, they would just stick down your throat every single week, you know. And listen, yeah, they're great teams, of course. And I love seeing Real Madrid play Manchester United, but not twice a year, every year. It will lose something. You want to have those smaller clubs, West Ham, for example, this year in Premier League, playing great football. They could finish in the top four. They could play Champions League football next year. You know, what about West Ham? They don't count anymore, apparently. Their fans don't count anymore. So that was such a huge oversight, and it's just soulless. And again, you know, we shouldn't be surprised. These guys have been using these clubs as cash boxes from day one, and they just misread the room entirely. So, you know, sports are about rivalries, right? And sports clubs aren't about the stadiums, even the players. They're about the fan bases and the passion in those stands. And they just did not care, and they dismissed it out of hand.
James, we've got about 60 seconds, so I'm going to ask you to be quick, although it's not fair because it's probably a longer answer. What do you think the fallout is here? Money is power. These owners are extremely rich. They drive the buses for their leagues, and yet you don't want to be seen as setting a precedent of just allowing stuff like this to be considered, to be floated every now and then. How does the next little bit play out as UEFA, FIFA, whomever considers sanctions, fines, what have you?
Yeah, well, there's a problem. The sad part is I'm sure UEFA has spoken to all these clubs and said, listen, you know, we don't want you in these tournaments. We will kick you out of all our tournaments. However, we can maybe richen the pot a little bit for you in the Champions League. There's changes already coming this week to the Champions League for next season, or 2024, sorry. They might give these clubs a bit more money to sweeten that pot. So they stick around a little bit longer, which is sad, I suppose. But I wonder if the fan power here will drive some of these owners away. The Glazers are despised at Manchester United at this point, more than the other owners, just despised. And I wonder if these billionaires will throw their toys out of the pram and look for some other method to make their money, because the egos have to have been bruised. That's hopefully what happens. I suspect that won't be the case, because they can be absentee owners, make lots of money, and really not face the wrath face on from the fan base.
Always good to hear your voice, James. Thanks for doing this morning, and we encourage everyone to listen to the Footy Prime podcast. Thanks, pal.
Thanks, fellas. We'll chat soon.
You bet. James Sharman. The Toronto Maple Leafs will not have anything happen between now and the end of the regular season that alleviates the concern of the fan base regarding the state of its goaltending. I'm telling you right now. Freddie ain't going to play enough. Jack ain't going to play enough. And David Rittich played the way he played last night. I don't know if anybody wants to see that again.
Oh, boy.
The goaltending is an issue. The Blue Jays need their health. And the Raps back in action tonight. The pursuit of that playoff spot. It's all ahead. The Leafs didn't win last night. The Blue Jays didn't win last night. The Raptors play tonight. So do the Blue Jays. Cue the music, Silent Vic. I always love looking at Ziggy's face on FaceTime as he's trying to piece together what this music is. This is the Undertaker's theme song, which I think is a perfect, perfect tune to play underneath John Henry, the owner of, which one is he, Liverpool? I can't keep track of it. He's also the principal owner of the Boston Red Sox. John Henry's description of how it all ended for the European Super League.
I want to apologize to all the fan supporters of Liverpool Football Club for the disruption I caused over the past 48 hours. The project put forward was never going to stand without the support of the fans. Over these 48 hours, you were very clear that it would not stand. We heard you. I heard you.
Guy sounds fun at parties, huh? I mean, I'm sure the parties he could throw with his money would be fun to attend, but I don't think he himself is fun at parties.
I heard you.
I heard you. I'm John Henry.
Hasn't this been in the works for months?
Oh, God.
I haven't heard one owner, one team representative say that if the fans support this, then this is the only way that we're in. I haven't heard one ownership group say that.
I'm going to throw out the very obvious statement of the day. They don't care. They didn't care. But this is the power of the people, the pushback, right? And the players also don't want anything to do with this. And if it's going to affect their ability to compete internationally, Ziggy, imagine... I keep using the Maple Leafs as an example, localize this thing. Imagine the Maple Leafs are just vaulted into some kind of previously unknown Super League concept, and it prevents Austin Matthews from representing the USA at the Olympics. It prevents name a Maple Leaf from representing William Nylander from representing Sweden at the Olympics. John Tavares a few years ago, because it's less likely now, but John Tavares from representing Canada at the Olympics. Like, there are just so many different pressure points here. The players don't want anything to do with this, so it dies on the vine. It dies on the vine.
Well, I think it was a number of things. Once you have a certain amount of your fan base upset with the move you're trying to make, I think that will affect what you want to do. The fact that you just brought up, if I'm a player and I can't play internationally anymore, I think soccer more than any other sport in the world, it would affect. So you have the pressure on the players. And then all of a sudden you have FIFA coming on and they put their, you know, they put their squeeze on you, and we all know how powerful they are and what their organization is about, and they'll do anything to get it their way. But let's talk about this. Like, this is about money. This is about the fact that these 12 teams want to join a Super League because they think they're not getting their fair share of money right now, and they think there's even more money in forming something like the Super League. Like, that's what, like, what else is it?
Well, that's all it is, right? I mean, and these are teams that are never going to end up facing relegation, not with their ability to just fire up. What's up?
You want to mention relegation, I will have to stop you here. You want to put a stop to the tanking in professional sports leagues in North America?
Relegate?
Have the NHL relegate two teams to the AHL every year?
Imagine.
So you make it a 30-team league again next year, and the two worst teams go and play in the AHL for the year. So, So that's all. That's all. I don't know.
The Toronto Maple Leafs would have played under your proposed system. The Toronto Maple Leafs would have played Mike Babcock's second year, Austin's, Mitch's, and Willie's first full year in the NHL, down at Coca-Cola Coliseum on the exhibition grounds. They would have been playing the Lowell Lockmonts. Well, they don't even exist anymore. They would have been playing anymore. The Hershey Bears, baby.
San Antonio Rampage. There you go.
You imagine? Can you imagine? Tonight, it's the Toronto Maple Leafs against the Ontario Reign. A city in California named after our province is coming to town.
You want to talk about
your tickets.
Lottery picks and what's fair and how many balls are in, like, you want to get rid of all of that and what's fair, and you want to see teams not tank? You relegate two teams every year. I played in Sweden. It's a big deal. Like, you don't want to get close to that ball.
Would the Buffalo Sabres be in the ECHL by now? Imagine that. Could you get relegated from the AHL?
The only reason why it doesn't work is they don't operate on a draft system, right? Like, the Swedish Elite League, right. Every team has your minor, you have your under 20 team where it's
they've
all
got
kids
academies, right?
Yeah, and you get to hold your players. Like, it's not the same system as the NHL, so it doesn't quite work. Like, obviously, it's a great idea to stop teams from tanking, and, you know, you won't get this, you know, play the prospects or try to lose out the rest of the season. That doesn't happen in any of these leagues because, like, I can't even imagine what my European hockey team, like my Swedish Elite League team in Eurogarden, if we would have got relegated when I was there. Like, it is really bad. Like, they bring in players. They sign players at the end of year when they know you're not safe. Or if you get you go into a relegation tournament, they bring players in for that tournament. Like, it's a big deal.
Sure.
Because it's a huge revenue loss for those teams once they go from the elite league down to the second league. But yeah, this whole thing with soccer, I mean, it's a great idea. I was kind of interested. I think a super league would be kind of cool.
Well, but here's the thing. I think James Sherman hit the nail on the head that this was a near quarter century plan. And what do we know about life to be true when it comes to our sports? Like, I was born in 1979. The Toronto Blue Jays came into the league in 1977. I can talk to my mom and dad about their baseball fandom pre-Blue Jays. I don't know a world where the Toronto Blue Jays don't exist. I remember a world where the Toronto Raptors don't exist because they came into being in 1995. I was 16. But there's a whole swath of young Raptors fans who don't know a world where the Raptors don't exist. And so that's what these guys, I would imagine, looking to the long term, were aiming for. Babies and young kids coming up, growing up right now around the world, getting to that first point in their lives where they have disposable income, their early 20s, living in a world where this Super League was all they ever knew. But it takes 20 years. It's like the Sun Belt teams in the NHL, right? Nashville, Phoenix. They're kids all over America now who've grown up in hockey markets that have an NHL team, but their parents or grandparents didn't have that. That's what they were counting on. But the revolt here, the fans stood up and said, no, you're not. You've already stripped so much of the local grassroots feel to our sport. There's foreign ownership everywhere. The American billionaires own a lot of these teams. Roman Abramovich, one of Putin's stooges, owns Chelsea. Like, it's you've already taken enough from us. You're not taking our rivalries. I'm a Spurs fan. I want to see my team play West Ham United. That's our rival. You're not taking that from me by putting my team in the Super League. So,
for teams that were going to join the Super League, each were going to get $425 million U.S. dollars to join the Super League.
Is that okay?
Like that's a nice little sweeten the pot a little bit. Hey, you want to join my league? Here's half a bill to start off, and then you're going to make more than you were in the current.
It's like
system,
a quarter of £1 billion or euros or whatever. Yeah, it's still a ton of cake. Yeah. A ton of cake.
Yeah, 350 euros. So yeah, it's I guess they're gonna. I just wonder if they're gonna change. There is proposals right now to change the Champions League setup. Like, I don't want to go into the details because it's boring. But 32 to 36 teams, 10 games, 100 new matches. But they're obviously, the pressure is on to UEFA to make it more interesting and to get more money to these 12 of the best clubs in the world, most popular. Like, that's what the Super League was all about. They don't feel like they're getting their fair share.
Leafs lose last night. David Rittich in the third period was not BSD, big save Dave. He was NSD, no save Dave. It was bad. And so life comes full circle so many different ways, Ziggy, and here we are back on the goaltending wagon. We have seen Jack Campbell regress, not to, I think, a place where anybody needs to panic about it, but the very questions that we have been asking throughout, celebrating the 9th consecutive victory, 10th, and then the 11th consecutive victory as he sets a Maple Leafs record, 11-0 to start a season. Wonderful. We were happy for him. But we haven't seen it play out long-term over his career. This is not a guy who has started many NHL hockey games over the decade since he's been drafted. David Rittich was the backup in Calgary. The Flames decided that he wasn't their guy because they went and signed Jacob Markstrom to a 6-year contract in the offseason last year. And we're waiting for Frederik Andersen, the pending UFA, to get back to health, whether there are LTIR shenanigans at play here or whether he's still feeling something and has to get to 100% or a combination of both. On the morning of game one of the playoffs, whatever that date is, I guarantee you the first question we'll be dealing with is, will the goaltending hold up or will the goaltending sink this ship? That's what's got Leaf fans fearful right now, and they got a right to be worried.
And it seems like for Leafs fans right now, it's always something, right? Isn't it like, at every year, part of the schedule, whether it's 82 games or 56, it's like the last 20 games or 15 games or 10 games, something creeps in and they have a right to be upset. Like, it's always something. It's the team's not responding to the coach. They've shut him out. They can't get the goaltending, injuries, not consistent play. It's just, I feel like they have a right to be frustrated with this team. But I the last couple games, it's not as big, it's a goaltending issue. This isn't a major problem with the way the roster's constructed or who they've traded for
or how well the Big Four are playing. I really do think these two games, if you just get average goaltending, you win both, right? I think you win both. So I'm not as concerned as other years. Like a year ago, I was concerned. 2 years ago, you know, they got off to the hot start but weren't playing well. I'm like, this is gonna pop its head out at the wrong time this year, and it did a couple years ago. Last year, yeah, before the shutdown, there was a lot of things I didn't like. You see Keith yelling behind the bench. I didn't like any of that. But this year is a little bit different. Like the fact that they're not sure what's happening yet, yeah, it's not great, but it's not what we've seen in past years. So I wouldn't equate to what's happening with this team to past year's teams.
Meanwhile, the Blue Jays are 4-2 losers in Boston last night, and Ziggy, Hyunjin Ryu gave up 4 runs in the bottom of the fourth. So Bo Bichette opened the scoring in the top of the fourth inning with a solo home run. That was a monster shot that cleared the monster, cleared the stadium, landed on the other side of the wall. Somebody who didn't buy a ticket ended up with that baseball. But then he gives up 4 in the bottom of the fourth, and for the rest of the game, it just felt like a slog. It felt like a night where the Blue Jays were going to lose. Yet you look up, and they actually had the tying run up at the plate in the top of the ninth inning. A 2-run bomb could have changed the course of things. So they're close, and yet they feel so far away. Lourdes Gurriel Jr. isn't hitting and is playing left field in 2021 like he played shortstop in the first couple of weeks of 2019. The type of play that got him demoted to the minor leagues at the time, converted to the outfield, where up until now he's, in my view, excelled, he looks completely lost. Marcus Semien is not working out as a leadoff hitter, and hopefully George Springer will be back on the weekend to rectify that. This team misses Teoscar Hernandez's bat, even if he started slowly, in the middle of the order right now. It doesn't have a lot of length. There are too many uncompetitive at-bats. The count is 0-2 or 1-2 far too often. Frustration is building in the fan base, and yet it is, as Marcus Semien said, still early. The hope here has to be that they get guys back. Some of the relief pitching is going to return here. Chatwood and Romano not believed to be serious. The hope here is that you get Springer, Teoscar, a couple of the pitchers back, and you start to find your groove sooner rather than later. They play tonight in Boston, and if they don't get a good result tonight, they go into the old House of Horrors, as John Gibbons used to like to call Tropicana Field, to play a fundamentally sound and difficult Rays team. This thing is running the risk of going off the rails. And yet it's still early, is what I'm telling myself.
Well,
to convince myself.
Well, the injuries concern me a lot. The fact that it doesn't matter what sport you play. When you have your best player out and you've got problems in your bullpen, you don't know who's part of your rotation. Springer's out, Teoscar's out. You got guys with COVID. You don't know what's happening. Springer, multiple injuries. You've got two young guys who were supposed to take that next step in Bo and Cavan, and all of a sudden, Cavan's out in right field. When you have all these issues, you're not going to win. You're not going to have any kind of consistent play. So the fact that they're 7-10 right now, it's still okay. I just find, you know, April's like the Thursday of a golf tournament. You can't win the tournament, but you can lose it. And as long as they don't fall too far below 500, I'm okay. Just hover in around 500. Springer's back. Teoscar's back. Bo's better at short. Maybe he moves over to second. We don't sure. Once all the pieces are back together, then we can start evaluating this team. But right now, there's so many issues going on right now that are out of control. Like, it's not just poor play. Like, it's not just poor offense at this point. It's not just that. I think it's imperative they have to find a leadoff guy that's consistent.
They need Springer back. That's what they need. They need Springer.
Yeah, I mean, that's at the end of the day, for sure.
I'm just like, a couple of the plays Bo was making yesterday, it's like the first one he bobbles when he picks it up because he's worried about his accuracy. He's looking at Vlad and he's worried he's going to get it off in time. Then he picks up a ball fine, but concentrates so much on it that the slow to second is Semien and they can't turn two. Like
he's almost in between right now.
Yeah. And I'm surprised to see that. I know we had some errors in the playoffs last year that are uncharacteristic, but at this point that can't, like, if you want to be a playoff team, those can't happen. Gurriel, like left field yesterday, like some of these paths he's taken, I'm not quite sure. He makes some great plays though. Like every odd game, it's like he makes a play catch that's like incredible. But the way he played in left field yesterday, it's head scratching.
We'll get back into this with Dan Schulman in the 8 o'clock hour. The Blue Jays with a big game. I call it a big game tonight in Boston. You win your 8-10, you lose your 7-11, you're off tomorrow, and you got three games down at the Trop in Tampa Bay Friday through Sunday. And those games are always, always tough. Dan Schulman next hour, and Ann Virk as well. On the other side, Adam Van Cuverden is an Olympic gold medalist. He is now the MP for Milton, and he will join us to discuss the role sports can play at the grassroots level as we push through the very difficult third wave of this now year-plus-long COVID-19 pandemic. And here he is. He is the Parliamentary Secretary for Sport, the MP for Milton, a gold and bronze medalist in kayaking at the 2004 Athens game, and he won silvers in Beijing and London in 08 and 12, a 2007 and 2011 world champion. The resume is long. Here is Adam Van Cuverden. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, Scott. I'm doing well, man. Nice to be on the radio, and I've missed sports radio.
Yeah.
To be back.
you're looking out the window this morning, and you're going, are we sure it's April the 21st?
Yeah, there's something wrong with this. Well, there's a lot wrong with the world right now. But yeah. Hey, look, this is, we were all just falling victim to false spring, or to fool's spring, perhaps.
You're right. Yeah. Well, it hit us in mid-March, and we were all thinking we were going to parachute into summer. And here we are with a quick break. Anyway, it's a good reminder for the Maple Leafs that it's still winter, and they need to turn things around.
I'm going to dig my shovel out and get the sidewalk shoveled.
Yes, please do. Please do. And do ours while you're at it.
Sure.
So the federal government has come out with its budget. We'll start with this point. It's come out with its budget, which includes an $80 million investment in sport, physical activity, and recreation. We're living in such weird times, such uncertain times. It's tough to know, Adam, if and when it's safe to get out of the house, and if and when we do, what to do when we get out of the house. What is the aim of this $80 million in cash, and what is it intended for?
Well, I appreciate that. And Canadians have certainly sacrificed so much this year to keep our neighbors safe. And it's been a really difficult year for businesses. It's been a difficult year for families. It's been a difficult year for mostly everybody in Canada. And we need to acknowledge that. And then moving forward, we've got to invest in institutions and in programs that are going to help get us back to normal. And this, you know, three of the things that I miss the most are high fives, hugs, and handshakes. And those happen on the field of play. I miss watching kids, you know, run around, play soccer. I miss playing soccer myself. But young Canadians in particular, they've missed out on the chance to learn new skills and to make memories with their teammates and to learn how to win well and to learn how to lose well. And the sport, just teaches people critical skills. It's good for our mental health. It's good for our physical health. It's good for the social and economic revitalization of our communities. And I think that this investment in sport, physical activity and recreation is going to go a really long way in getting Canadians moving again. But I think sport has a really prominent role to play in rebuilding our economy. It's going to fortify our health. And this is going to bring us back together in a safe way, like you said. And there's got to be, you know, some provisions to make sure that sport and play, the field of play, is a safe place in the coming months when we're able to get back to it. But I'm really interested in capitalizing on the opportunity that sport provides, because Canadians have never been more focused on their health. And you might be surprised to know that compared to other countries, we're not that active. You know, Canadians love the outdoors and we love sport. But in, compared to many peer nations, the physical activity levels, particularly of our youth, are going down. So this $80 million is to kickstart local organized sports. It's to reinvest in institutions. It's to reinvest in community sport at that grassroots level, and really to inspire a generation to get involved, enroll, and participate.
In the last couple of days, it's been a tough week, I guess, for Ontario. The fact that the government's shut down or golf and parks. I don't know, parks are back open again, but just tennis courts. And I have a couple nephews. I'm trying to find, you know, activities to do with them, but it's like every time we want to do something, whether it's rock climbing or, you know, go and play tennis or bring them to a driving range, it's been one of those obviously tough years and tough weeks now that there's even more shutdown. What do you think can be done? Like, is any of this, Can anything be done with the government right now to help improve the, you know, the options for youth right now? Or is there any ideas or anything being discussed to, you know, to have more options for our youth?
Well, first of all, your nephews are really lucky that they've got an uncle that's looking out for them, and like I'm sure their parents are too, but. You know, it's just great that they've got a mentor and somebody that wants to play with them. Sport, such an important aspect of a young kid's life. And I just want to reiterate that recognizing that Canadians have sacrificed so much, you know, on the field of play and off, and there's got to be a way to get back. We know that it's going to take time, and, you know, we recognize that that there's a time for getting back, and it's important to recognize that, yeah, we do have to stay home and stay healthy right now. I was glad to see that the premier, you know, go back on some of the decisions regarding playgrounds, because honestly and truly, not every family has a backyard or a space to play in. So those public institutions are really, really important. Those public facilities, I should say, are really important for families who rely on them, so that their kids can, you know, develop a little bit of physical literacy. We've also just unveiled an enormous child care program, early learning and child care program, that in the next couple of years is going to completely change the way that parents can have economic mobility and reenter the workforce after having kids. And it's also my ambition to make sure that child care plan incorporates active child care and physical learning and physical literacy. Because the earlier kids learn how to be physically active and how to be physically literate and to develop that love for, you know, running and jumping and throwing a ball and bouncing a ball, that's an investment in that young person's future, and that's going to help. And I, you know, fully empathize with every parent right now that's struggling with what to do with their kids. It's so, so tough. But we're going to get back to a time soon where the options are limitless, and this $80 million investment in Canadian physical activity and grassroots sport and recreation in our communities is going to go a really long way to expedite that getting back to normal.
Adam Van Cuverden is our guest. He is the MP for Milton, the Parliamentary Secretary for Sport. This is Lead Off, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. So once an athlete, Adam, always an athlete. And I'm interested in a day in your life leading up to the 2004 games in Athens where you won a gold and a bronze, or a day in your life leading up to 08 in Beijing, 12 in London, where you were an active Olympian, and how you perhaps envision that routine being changed or disrupted, if at all, if you were an active and Olympic-bound athlete now, given that Tokyo 2020 was pushed back a year, and given the fact that there remains uncertainty about Tokyo 2021, is it just straight ahead, keep training,
and I'll let everybody else figure stuff out. Like I would imagine you'd be able to put yourself in the shoes of the current day athletes who are dealing with all of this strangeness.
Yeah, I have a hard time with it. I mean, I'm friends with many of them, and I follow even more on social media, and I'm worried about their journey. I am concerned with their preparation. But the Canadian sports system, Sport Canada, has done a really good job making sure that Canadian athletes have everything that they need. Every national sport organization has been working around the clock for the last year, figuring out how they can deliver their programming and maintain, you know, a safe training environment in their sports. So, you know, big kudos goes out to all the sport administrators and coaches in Canada. Little memory lane back in 2004. I mean, look, life was simpler in 2004. I didn't even bring a computer with me to Athens. I didn't need one. I didn't have a phone that could give me emails. We didn't have social media of any kind. It was, I wrote postcards and I made phone calls and I went and I brought my Scrabble board and my coach and I would have dinner and Athens was beautiful. We'd have dinner and we'd play a couple games of Scrabble and I'd watch 20 minutes of TV and I'd go to bed at 9:30. With no little glowing rectangle beside my bed. How nice is that, eh? And then, I'd get up and I'd walk to have a little breakfast, and I'd walk to the water, and Scott and I would talk about the workout, and I'd get on the water, and I'd do it with more or less no technology. You know, like in 2004, I probably had a Timex stopwatch on my boat, and now there's accelerometers, and there's GPSs, and there's stroke counters and there's power meters. And it's like, man, I just had a boat and a paddle. And like, sometimes the boat was a wooden one. When I was at the canoe club, I'd often use this old wooden boat. So the sport's changed a lot and sport has changed a lot. And so has the world. But it's nice to reflect on those years. My friends who are competing now, you won't be too surprised to know that many of them thought that Tokyo would be their last Olympics. Rio was mine, and I was proud of my race. I came in ninth place. I had the second fastest time of the day, but it got me first in the B final. And that's when I realized that, you know, I was kind of happy with ninth place, and that was an indication that it was time to retire, because I always paddled to win. And, you know, at the point where I was like in my mid-30s and I was, you know, paddling fast still, and I could post a good time a couple times a year, I wasn't consistently winning every year, and I wanted to be on Team Canada still. And it might sound, you know, like a little bit, facetious or something like that. But I love being on Team Canada. Canada's the best, and I want to fight for my country. And I know that we live in the best country in the world. And it was not an accident. Like we live in the best country in the world because people are willing to work hard for each other and put their names out there and, you know, stand up for their neighbors and make sure that everybody's voice is heard. That was my ambition in entering public service. And for the last year or so, I've worked really, really hard on this plan to get Canadians active again and to invest in the physical activity and, you know, fund sport, not just to support athletes and Olympic athletes, but to fund sport from a new perspective, to fund physical activity and recreation for improved health outcomes for all Canadians and to drive participation and to get everybody active and, you know, to promote health, to promote physical literacy and really to make sure that every kid, regardless of their economic background or socioeconomic status, regardless of any barriers that exist, that kid's going to have access to physical activity in a sport or a play program that they're inspired to try. I don't want there to be any financial barriers between physical activity and a kid's future. I was really lucky. You know, I grew up in community housing, a single mom. My dad was always around, but money was tight. And she brought me down to the canoe club because it was an affordable option for her. And somehow my coach recognized that and made sure that it was always affordable. You know, and, you can't rely on charity for that. I think Canada needs to invest in the future of kids. And it's obvious that the health has never been a bigger preoccupation for Canadians, and healthy sport and physical activity and recreation is going to be one way that we're going to get back to normal and get healthy again.
I've only been in a kayak once, and it was a 24-kilometer return trip to Spirit Island. I was on Mullane Lake in Jasper. What's tougher if you tip over, kayak or canoe? Because after I finished the trip, my buddy said that's the craziest thing he's ever heard. Because if I would have fallen over in the kayak, there's no way I would have been able to roll back and get back in my kayak. What's worse?
I guess it depends. If you're kayaking, then you probably don't have a ton of gear with you. But if you're doing like an overnight trip and you're in a canoe, when you've got all your gear with you and you fall in, like in Algonquin Park, then that's tough. A kayak, you can get back in a kayak. And a lot of people are afraid of kayaking because they think they might get stuck in the boat. Well, it doesn't happen. If you do fall in, then you know, you usually come right out. It's actually hard to stay in a boat when you're upside down. But you've actually touched on something that's really important to me. Swimming is a life skill that every single kid in Canada should have access to, because we are a country that's literally just littered with lakes and rivers and coastline, and swimming can save your life. And I think that absolutely every kid in Canada should have access to a free swimming lesson and to make sure that they've got that life-saving skill. There are unnecessary drownings in every community in Canada every single year, including in mine in December, a tragic drowning. And a swimming lesson can save lives. And, you know, whether that's because you're on a rude awakening kayak trip in Jasper, that's too far for your first paddle, man. Like, come on, take baby steps. You know, you would have enjoyed yourself a lot more if you'd, you know, your first paddle.
I wish somebody had that thing taped, because it was.
Just have Adam take you to Oakville. Just have Adam take you to Oakville, the rushing rapids of 16 Mile Creek. I mean, Ziggy just did baby steps.
The rushing rapids. You know Oakville pretty well, I think. And I know it's pretty flat and boring, but that's a long paddle for anybody, let alone a rookie. But part of this $80 million investment is going to make sure that if a family can't afford swimming lessons, then their child or their children will have access to free swimming lessons.
Adam, we will leave it there, and thank you very much for your time. You know, you're a former athlete, probably still athletic, a former athlete who is now in public service, and you're a straight guy who speaks up for marginalized people and the LGBTQ plus community. And I say from the bottom of my heart, I thank you for that, because people need allies, and you are one of them. So thank you for your time.
That's
this morning.
Yeah.
And we look forward to catching up and chatting again.
Yeah, anytime. Thanks, guys. Have a great day.
You bet. Enjoy. Adam Van Cooverden. He is the Parliamentary Secretary for Sport and the MP for Milton. He is a gold medalist at the 2004 Games, also won a bronze in Athens, a couple of silvers, 08 in Beijing, 12 in London, and as he alluded to, concluded his Olympic career 2016 in Rio. Should have asked him, Zig, how many times did you capsize before you figured out how many times did you capsize before you figured out how to run one of those kayaking deals and run all the way to the Olympics and win a gold? He allayed a fear of mine. Like those things tip. I envision being underwater, unable to get out.
I had shorts on and a rain jacket. My buddy said if you would have fallen in, you would have had 30 seconds to get back in your kayak, or you would have passed out from hypothermia because the water was so cold in Mullane Lake. I'm in Jasper in, I think it was end of June. He's like, dude, the water was cold. I'm like, I didn't touch. It would splash on me a little bit, but I didn't notice it. I left right at sunrise, and I was gone all day. It was like 24 kilometers return. Some of the most scenic I've never seen anything like that before. Like, you can't hike to the south part of Mullane Lake. It's like called the Hall of Gods. It's gorgeous. It's something called Spirit Island. You can look it up. It's quite amazing. There's a couple campgrounds. We can't drive there, can't hike there. You can only get there, if you get in a canoe or a kayak. There's no motorized boats allowed on the lake. I know they have like some kind of tour. They go a couple times a day.
So it's surrounded by water. Like you couldn't hike in on foot.
You can't hike into around to the bottom of Mullane Lake. There's nothing. And then you got grizzly bear, like you got bears everywhere. It's not, it's like, it's out there. I don't know if anybody's been to Jasper. I'm talking from downtown Jasper to the trailhead kind of where I got the kayak. It's about an hour from downtown. I probably saw 15, 20 bears
Duh, bears.
Both ways. No Grizzlies in my drive, just black bears, but bears nonetheless, right? But it's absolutely gorgeous out there. Yeah, my buddy's like, oh, yeah, just get a kayak, you know, go for a spin around. I'm like, okay, I'll go for a spin around. Then talk to someone else like, oh, Spirit Island's really nice. I'm like, okay, I'll look that up. Like, yeah, it's, you know, it's 12K each way. You look in good shape. You should be fine. And apparently after I came back, they're like, that was really bad idea.
Well, maybe Helena Bolka is booking her next vacation. Who knows? Adnan Virk is with us in just a moment. But first, here's what we're talking about this morning on Leadoff, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Leafs 6-3 losers in Vancouver last night. David Riddick, if you haven't seen the highlights, turn away. Don't look when they come on your TV screen. His third period, not pretty. The Leafs actually scored a little more than 3 minutes into the third period, shorthanded to take a 3-2 lead. Everything else after that, not worth mentioning. Leafs into Winnipeg to take on the Jets tomorrow night. The Blue Jays, don't look now. They are 7-10 off of their 4-2 loss in Boston last night. They've got the series finale with the Red Sox. It's a short two-gamer at Fenway tonight. Trent Thornton will get the ball to start, we believe. Jays are off tomorrow, then have a three-game series in St. Pete's at the Trop against the Rays. Put it this way, Jays could use a win tonight to sort of stop the flow in the wrong direction. And the Raptors are back in action tonight down in Tampa. They take on the Brooklyn Nets. The Raps are a half game back of the 10th seed in the Eastern Conference, the final seed of the play-in tournament. Adnan Virk, I just got to get the resume out here. Okay, the problem is, Ziggy, I don't know.
No, let's do it all.
I don't know if seven or eight jobs have been added since we talked to him last week. So MLB Network, NHL Network, GM Shuffle Pod, which he co-hosts with Michael Lombardi, former NFL exec. He hosts the Cinephile Pod. He is also, of course, the voice of WWE's Monday Night Raw. He is a married father of four, and he likes walks on the beach. Hello, sir.
I love that bio.
I mean, has anything else happened in the last week that we need to know about?
I just feel bad, Scotty, for the person who's to update my Wikipedia. I feel like every week there's going to be somebody on that because we all know if it's on the internet, it has to be true. Hey, let's add those. Yeah, go
be
ahead.
Honest, Adnan. You're the one who updates your Wikipedia page. Come on.
I swear I'm not. But one time I did notice a mistake, Scotty, and I said, someone's going to fix this. And my wife did fix it for me. It said something about he was because you know what? Somebody asked me on the radio. I think it was Michael Landsberg. Was like, oh, I didn't know you were like an all-state track athlete. I go, what? He goes, yeah, I saw it on Wikipedia. I go, no, that's not true. So I immediately had to have my wife change that. Someone thought I was like a track star in high school, which is not the truth.
Well, you're also 6'5" and 225 pounds of chiseled granite, according to your Wikipedia height and weight here. So congratulations on that as well.
Yeah, you can just start calling me the Rock of Gibraltar, Scotty, when you welcome me in. I'd appreciate it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, look, you've done a couple of Raw programs. How's it going? What's the experience like? The travel, you know, getting your feet wet in an area that you've been a fan of but not necessarily close to. How's it gone?
It's been great, Scotty. Honestly, it has been a really enjoyable experience because, as you said, you don't know what to expect. Like, it has been a true baptism by fire. As always, you have to rely on your teammates, and those guys have been great. Corey Graves and Byron Saxton, those guys are so smart. Seriously, we all know how tough three-man booths can be in any sport, and the fact that they're so learned and knowledgeable and so willing to jump in and help me out, that's been huge. Kevin Dunn, our producer, has been great. Obviously, Michael Cole's helping me out. And all the performers, they couldn't have been friendlier. Like, when you're actually there backstage, and if you have any questions, just like, hey, I'm not sure about the nuance of this move, or how does this lead to this? Like, everyone is more than willing to accommodate. So I think everyone recognizes everybody has a day one on the job, a week two on the job. And so they know you're going to learn and grow from there. And so it's actually been fun. You mentioned the travel, Scotty. So far, you know, we're in Tampa. We have a residency at the University of South Florida. Yep. I don't know how long that's going to continue. So for now, it's not too bad. I mean, it's a direct flight from Jersey, but I am curious at what point, when it starts traveling, what it's going to be like going to, you know, Waco, Texas and having 20,000 fans sold out. I'm sure then it's going to get wild.
What's something that's happened that you didn't think, you know, was what you thought the experience would be like so far?
Well, week one, Ziggy, when I think it was Braun Strowman. I can't remember. Everything kind of flies. No, it was Drew McIntyre. When Drew McIntyre got thrown on the announcer table, I was like, oh my goodness. Like, I had no idea that was coming. And if, I mean, I think I was on with McAuliffe and they show the clip and you could see, you know, Corey and Byron were smart enough to get up. They can sense it. But I was just dumb enough to just stay there at the announcer table. So thankfully, I did not wear it. But could you have imagined if I had tried to show up for my shift the next day at MLB Network? Like, what's with that giant welt on Vern's face? He did not have the good sense to get out of the way.
And Braun Strowman is not someone I'd describe as a tiny human. like, that guy is a brick bleep house, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, you got to be careful.
Well, there's a reason they call him, Scotty, the monster among men. Like, I looked at his bio, and it's 6'8", 385. I mean, just ferocious. Like I've interviewed Aaron Judge. I've met him. Okay, he's a pretty big guy, 6'7". Yep. He's not 385 like Braun Strowman. It's freaky.
Right, and with not a lot of body fat. I mean, that's saying something. So
yeah, 100%.
The Blue Jays are 7-10. They have a finale tonight in Boston, just a two-game series, another off day tomorrow, and then they go to Tampa Bay, which is nightmare-inducing for anybody who has cheered for the Blue Jays for longer than 6 minutes. They are missing George Springer and Teoscar Hernandez, although they expect to get those guys back by the weekend. They are missing some starting depth. They are missing some crucial high-leverage relief pitchers, some of whom hopefully will return in the not-too-distant future. There's a way to sell yourself, Adnan, on believing that things will turn when the lineup lengthens and some of the pitching gets back, but you see a lot of anxiety, I would describe, in the batter's box, a lot of 0-2-1-2 counts. You see Lourdes Gurriel struggling at the plate and playing left field like he played shortstop in the early part of 2019 that got him demoted. And you just see generally, I think, a young team still trying to figure out who it is. And I think tonight's a big game. I think you go into the off day tomorrow, if you're 7-11 facing 3 in Tampa Bay, man, this thing could get out of hand relatively quick.
Yeah, you broke it down really well, Scotty. Focus on the offense first. So all the Blue Jays, other than Vlad Jr. and Bo Bichette, the slash line is 203, 266, 314. I mean, that is woeful as far as
bad,
what the
bad,
offense
bad.
Has put
yep.
together. Yeah, and we had known coming in, said, listen, they're going to score runs. The starting rotation is a little bit suspect after Ryu, but as long as they can hit, that's fine. The fact that Semien's hitting like 182 on the season, that to me is a real eyesore. Guerrero's the only guy. I mean, he's really reaching base almost every time out there for them. Now, Hyunjin Ryu, another guy who's been great for them this season, but they've got to get other starters going. As you mentioned, Roark's a disappointment. Stripling got hurt. You know, obviously the guys in the bullpen, Merriweather. But to your point, it's still early, right? Well, you love that expression. Well, it's still early. It's only April baseball. Fine. But I agree. If you dig too big of a hole, if you're like, you know, 10 games under 500. It's just like in basketball. When a team's down by 10, it takes so much energy to expend it just to get back to 500. It's tough to get that boulder moving over the mountain again. Now, the A's did get off to a horrible start. They were like 0-6, and then bam, rip off a 6-game winning streak. Now we're at 500. Away we go. But I would agree with you, for the Blue Jays, it's a different schedule than last year. They've got a lot of games out of the gate against the Yankees, against the Rays, and that's why, you know, these so-called litmus tests end up being very important moving forward.
Is there any worry with Bo at short where at some point here you might have to move him? Or do you just eat these errors and defensive blunders and just kind of say this is a developing player, great bat, and we're going to give him more time?
You know what? I think for now, you just kind of accept it. I think with so many young players, you know, what happens is so much of it is confidence. And I think that Bo Bichette is a confident young player, Ziggy. But I do think, particularly with errors, you know, it's like a slump. You just can't get in your head. Once you get in your head and start making mistakes, well, all of a sudden, everything steamrolls. And look at another young shortstop in Fernando Tatis, off to a tough start, made like 5 errors in his first 4 games after having 1 error all of last year. And defense is one of those things, I think, with young players, you just have to have it improve with time. And even sometimes there can be regressions. Look at Marcus Semien. I mean, a couple years ago, his defense was incredible. That's why he was, I believe, 3rd in WAR in 2019. But then last year, his defense was disappointing, and therefore that impacted his overall game, not to mention the fact he had a bad offensive season. So I think in terms of Bichette, you're right to point it out because it is such a key linchpin position. But I think with a player of that value, what he means to franchise, you just ride out the mistakes, just like the Padres were doing with Tatis.
Adnan Virk is our guest on Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Let's do a little something to chew on, brought to us by Great Canadian Meat. So the Maple Leafs last night, did you catch the highlights? I've encouraged anyone who didn't to look away. Well, they score a shorthanded goal 3+ minutes into the third period to take a 3-2 lead in Vancouver. And then David Riddick decided it was time to be a spaghetti strainer. And the game tying goal and the 5-3 goal, the fourth goal was the go-ahead goal, game-winning goal, as it turned out, was a power play marker. Nothing he could have done about that. Tanner Pearson was left alone in front, batted home a rebound. But the third goal, the game tire, and the fifth goal, another Tanner Pearson goal, terrible angle. Shot was actually going wide, and Riddick misplayed it in off his pad. The Maple Leafs goaltending situation here, Adnan, the Frederik Andersen deal, whether it's LTIR or how he's feeling related or a combination of both, Jack Campbell's regression, which I don't believe is astronomic, but he has regressed, as I think we all understood he would. And David Riddick playing how he has played since donning the blue and white. I don't see a way that the Maple Leafs goaltending is not the lead topic on the morning of playoff game one. And that it is not a disconcerting topic at that time. I don't think anybody can do anything between now and the start of the playoffs to allay those fears.
I think that's really well said, Scotty. We were looking at, I think it was last week, it was the anniversary of the Blue Jackets pulling off that stunning upset of the Tampa Bay Lightning. And so we were looking at, you know, each team, each number one seed, which one is most susceptible to a potential upset. And, you know, some divisions are just stronger than others. And I think I was talking with Kevin Weeks about it. And he said, listen, you look at Toronto, they have all that talent, but it is the goaltending that's a concern. And, you know, so often goaltending becomes magnified and it's overly talked about, overly examined. But I think you're right. In this case, it is exactly what you said. It's the one glaring spot. Now, the team is loaded everywhere else. And I think that, you know, Dubas and company should be commended for looking at all the other ways they can shore up everything, whether it's power play, shorthanded goals, defense, offense, et cetera. But you're right. Ultimately, it is going to be the goaltending. And I think just in my heart, as you said, Freddie Andersen being hurt, it looks like it's going to be Jack Campbell. Like, it's going to be a guy who, you know, has been relatively not tested much, who got off to incredible start, you know, 10-0, whatever it was, 11-0. And now it's going to be, can he hang in the fire the entire duration? I often also think, especially with today's game, you can't really ride one goaltender. Like, you can do that, I guess, the Avalanche with Grubauer, just because he's been so reliant for them. But, you know, in the past, you could say, all right, we have one goal. He's going to go the whole wire-to-wire in the playoffs. I just don't know about this year with the shortened schedule, conditioning, et cetera. So I do think that Riddick, or if Andersen comes back healthy, they will play a part. But I agree with you. In terms of allaying fears, that's not going to happen until night one, until Campbell can do what he does. And I think Riddick clearly is the backup. I mean, if all of a sudden he has to be the starter, I would think that panic meter rises appreciably.
Nylander missed the meeting a couple days ago, and there was obviously Keefe came out and said he was going to miss yesterday's game, and then all of a sudden magically back in. Were you kind of surprised with that move, or is that one thing where you're, you know, professional sports, you shouldn't, these athletes are getting paid so much money, you shouldn't be missing meetings or late for meetings, regardless if you missed a text message or, you know, you didn't know. You should have an idea on when things are scheduled.
Yeah, I always believe, Ziggy, you can make any mistake. You just can't make the same mistake twice. I think then people get frustrated. So I think, if to your point, you know, if you miss a meeting once, you're late for a meeting once, you go, hey, listen, that can't happen again. Okay, fine. But if it does happen again, then you have, you know, full license to be furious with the person. So I think in the case of Nylander, you know, maybe it happened before and they'd given him a warning, or maybe it was the first time. Now, granted, it's not like his first season with the team. He knows meetings, et cetera. But that's just always my belief on it. Whenever I see a player get fined or overslept or missed a practice, whatever it is, I always go, okay, you get one mulligan, you do it again, then you can get fined. Or I'm never a fan of actually taking them out of the lineup, unless it's like a really egregious action and, you know, they're just completely negligent about it. But in the case of Nylander, I mean, if you're apologetic and reproachful, it won't happen again, and I don't make too much of it.
And then who knows between now and next week whether a Super League or three will be birthed and then die in between our conversations.
Gotta be one of the wackiest stories ever, Scotty. Like, I wasn't really following it. And then my buddies were soccer fans at WWE Extra mentioned, hey, how about the Super League thing? I said, oh, well, you know, I'll get around to it. And then it's done. I said, this is hysterical. I'm seeing tombstones for this thing that's lasted 3 days.
Well, Ziggy and I both agreed that it kind of sounded cool. And then you thought about it for a few seconds and you go, well, let's relate it back to home. So, like, if the Toronto Maple Leafs suddenly decide to join some Super League and that means they'll never play the Montreal Canadiens again, I wouldn't be happy about that. And I think the conversation is this, and it's a reminder that the team you hate, that half of the rivalry, is as important as the team you love. Without the foil, without the antagonist, there's no protagonist, right? So if I'm a West Ham or Tottenham fan, and Tottenham's going off to the Super League, we're never going to see another Spurs Hammers game again, right? So, like, it's that sort of thing. It was interesting that the revolt was so deep that the guys with deep pockets who threw all of this together actually pivoted and paid attention.
I agree. That is
interesting. Because they didn't seem to care leading up to it. So why did they suddenly care when it all went to hell?
Right. It's like sometimes when stories come out and then they're retracted and you go, they almost kind of want to see what the reaction is going to be, right? Like, hey, can you put this out there, see what people are going to say? And when there's this torrent of negativity, okay, let's pull that one back. Sorry, guys. That was a bad idea. That one's on us. Like, I agree. And normally people with money don't care because for that very reason, Scotty, they go, oh, whatever. We got the money. They don't like it. They'll fix it. They'll adjust to it. No, this time they had to adjust to everyone else. So it's good to see a measure of comeuppance, so to speak.
Well, and we'll leave it here, Adnan. We don't want to leave you without this present, the opportunity to hear the ever-so-exciting John Henry issue an apology.
I want to apologize to all the fans, supporters of Liverpool Football Club for the disruption I caused over the past 48 hours.
I mean it.
The project put forward was never going to stand without the support of the fans. Over these 48 hours, you were very clear that it would not stand. We heard you. I heard you.
We heard you. I heard you. I didn't bother to ask in advance how you might feel about it. But now that I've heard you, we won't do it. Thank you for your time.
I picture him like Alistair Cook, like in a smoking jacket. He's in front of a fireplace, and he has a pipe. And now we're going to read select stories of Hemingway.
Oh, all right, God.
Sure. Sounds good.
Yeah. I mean, I know that it would probably be no different on our side of the pond with professional sports ownership and all that, but especially the Premier League, like the foreign ownership, right? Whether it's Abramovich of Chelsea or the Glazer family of Manchester United who are despised, or John Henry of Liverpool, the family, the royal family of Abu Dhabi owning Man City. Like, it's just the grassroots nature of pro sports over there has certainly lost something in the last couple of decades, Adnan. And I would argue that it's sort of happening all over the world. But these are major investments. And as we see in the NFL and every league, you buy something for a few million bucks and all of a sudden it's worth a few billion bucks a quarter of a century down the road.
Yeah, I remember when the Glazer family started getting involved. Everyone's like, wait, what is this going on? Like, who are these interlopers from America trying to buy English Premier League soccer? I'm like, oh, well, it's just people with a lot of money who also have capital and ways to borrow money and figure this out. Like, yeah, let's go make this investment. I would argue buying a professional sports franchise, I'm sure there's exceptions, it's one of the great investments in life. Mm-hmm. Why do you think Alex Rodriguez is trying to buy the Minnesota Timberwolves or whatever? Maybe it has happened by now. Like, he's like, wait, I've got some money and I can, like you said, double it, triple it. It's just a matter of time. Okay, I'm in.
Well, A-Rod also has more time on his hands these days, so.
Once in a while, things are going to turn out well for that guy. I don't know when, but things are going to turn out well for him.
Yeah, he'll do okay. The notion of, you know, spending winters in Minneapolis watching basketball games is suddenly appealing to him now that J-Lo kicked him to the curb. We'll talk next week, pal. Always enjoy it.
Thanks, Scotty. Thanks, Ziggy. Take care.
Adnan Virk, weekly guest with us Wednesdays here on Leadoff, voice of WWE Monday Night Raw, which you can see on Sportsnet 360. Also with the MLB and NHL networks and the co-host with Michael Lombardi of the GM Shuffle podcast covering the NFL. Dan Shulman on the state of the Blue Jays. Do they have a problem in left field? And who should lead off tonight? Those questions and more for Dan Shulman next. Cajun Red Sox play the series finale tonight. Doesn't really feel like it's a finale when it just started last night, but a 4-2 loss at Fenway Park drops the Blue Jays to 7-10, and a lot to get to with the play-by-play voice of the Blue Jays on Sportsnet, Dan Schulman, who is brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. Dan, good morning to you. 7-10, and if it doesn't go well tonight, 7-11 is a possibility heading into Tampa Bay. I keep reminding myself that you don't have to get off to a good start to make the playoffs, that the mid-2010s Blue Jays didn't get off to good starts in 15 and 16, but that team was far more veteran than this one. What's your assessment of where things are at right now?
I think they're, and good morning, I think they're a little precarious, to be honest with you, just because there are a number of issues that they're trying to deal with at the same time, and they're not healthy. Now, the good news is, if all goes well, which is an enormous if, Springer's close, Teoscar's close, Romano's close, Chatwood's close. Great. You don't know what they're going to be like when they get back. I mean, Springer hasn't played in a game in a long time. Teoscar wasn't swinging it well beforehand. But I look at this as a big stretch, tonight's game and then the next three against Tampa Bay, because you're playing divisional teams. And if you, Scott, if you take a quick look through their schedule, which I did yesterday, it's difficult at the early going. They don't play Baltimore until the middle of June. And then they play them 10 times in 18 games. That's great. But I think they've got to find a way just to not get buried too early in the season. Hopefully get healthy. Hopefully some guys start hitting like we know they're capable of. And then we see what's up. But it's a little dicey right now for 17 games into the season, in my opinion.
What's more of a concern for you, the sloppy defense or the lack of offense?
Well, that's a tough question.
And does one tie to the other in some individual players' cases?
Yeah, sometimes, sure. I think sometimes a guy can take a bad at bat into the field. And I think sometimes on a couple of occasions it's felt to me like Bo Bichette's taken a misplay in the field to the plate. So, excuse me, I'm sorry. So, I think they're both concerns. I guess bigger picture, it would be the offense, because I think overall the offense has a bigger say in whether or not you're winning games than defense does. And they're supposed to be a great offensive team, and maybe they still will be once Springer and Teoscar come back. But the defense is an issue, and it's no secret. Bo's had issues at short. Kevin Biggio's had issues at third. Lourdes Gurriel has had issues and left. And I think it might be getting a bit of a free pass because there's been a little focus on other spots, but Gurriel has not played well in left field. So that's three spots where you've had issues. The catchers have only thrown out one runner, which is not as big a deal as it used to be because teams don't run as much as they used to, but it is still a problem. So, they've got issues in both areas. Really, the bullpen is holding up the team. The starting pitching's been okay, and Guerrero's been a rock star. Like, that's what's really, really going well. And Grichuk deserves a little credit, too. Grichuk's played well. Hit another home run last night. He's made all the plays in the field. But they got a number of areas that they got to improve.
Well, so the two areas, and I'll stick to one at a time here, and you brought them both up, Gurriel and then the catching. So Gurriel, to me, Dan, is playing like the guy who got demoted after the first couple of weeks of 2019 when they took him off of shortstop in the minor leagues and moved him to left field. Like, his defensive issues in left field aren't entirely similar because it's such a different position, obviously, outfield versus infield. But his defensive play is at that level, and he's not doing a single thing offensively. It's early, yes, but we've seen this before, which is why it worries me.
I agree with you to a certain extent. Last year, he had an amazing year offensively. And there are going to be all kinds of guys. I think we're going to look back at Baseball Reference in 10 years, and we'll see all kinds of guys where 2020 was an outlier. Maybe in a positive sense, maybe in a negative sense, because it was such a short season. I hope that's not Gurriel, because I think he can hit. I really, really think he can hit. But he does not look good at the plate this year. He's chasing. And he, like, you don't see as much battling and fouling off pitches. And I mean, he was he can be a really tough out because he's got great reach. He's an unpredictable guy, but he's not playing well. The outfield concerns me even more, to be honest with you. And I remember hearing that he was when I heard he was a Gold Glove finalist last year in left field, which I don't know if you guys remember that he was. I remember, you know, kind of, I'm sure I gave it kind of the Spock eyebrow thing and went, really? I think last year there were just a number of opportunities where he had a chance to make a play with his arm from the outfield, and he did it. And he threw guys out. You guys remember them. Threw guys out at home, threw guys out at second. I think his arm propped up his overall defensive analytics last year. He has not taken good routes to the ball. He just doesn't. And he's one of these guys, I said it on the air a couple of nights ago, and I don't know if it made sense or not. You think he's fast? He looks like he's fast, or he should be fast. He's not fast. I remember looking last year, Danny Jansen's sprint speed is better than Lourdes Gurriel's. And that's on both of them. Jansen's actually quicker than people think he is, but Gurriel is not fast. So there's a lot to look at there and to wonder about. And I don't think they're going to make any rash decisions. But if Springer and Teoscar come back, and now again they're in that 10 guys for 9 spots, you know, maybe it's not Grichuk we're talking about. Maybe it's not Rowdy we're talking. Maybe, you know, Gurriel has to fight his way for everyday playing time because they need the lineup to be longer. And one of the best ways they can do that is Gurriel to start hitting better.
Yeah, and obviously getting Springer and Teoscar back, but that's just a matter of them getting healthy. I promise you, and we're with Dan Schulman, I promise you I'm not trying to lead the witness here, but just a brief answer and I'll follow up with my little diatribe, which of course you know is coming. They're down 2, top of the 8th inning, bottom of the lineup up. Adam Ottavino with the killer slider, right-handed pitcher, is on the mound for Boston. Who do you think has a better chance of reaching base? Alejandro Kirk or Danny Jansen?
Alejandro Kirk. And I don't know, you know, what time you go to sleep, considering you have to wake up at 3:30 in the morning. But we talked about it on the air.
Yes, you did.
And I don't remember my exact words, but I said something like, you know, it's interesting, Tabby, you and I talked about this during the break, and we wondered who they would take out. Because if you take out Jansen, you lose the DH, but it's already the 8th inning. Kirk can catch. And then if you get to that spot again, I don't remember if we went into that much detail. But like Joe, you know, Joe Panik could have pinch hit in the 9th in the pitcher spot if that spot had gotten up. So, yes, I would have done it the other way. I would have had him pinch hit for Jansen.
Right. And if Kirk happens to reach base, which is no guarantee, but if he happens to, well, then that means that Josh Palacios or whomever, Joe Panik, pinch hits for Danny Jansen as the tying run. So that's separate from the point I'm going to make, which is this, Dan. If you determine that your backup catcher is a good enough hitter that you make him the designated hitter, but then pivot and determine that he's not a good enough hitter to come up in right. a key spot in the 8th inning, such that you pinch hit for him, eliminating the availability defensively later in the game if you absolutely needed him in a pinch of your backup catcher, and you pinch hit for him with mm-hmm. a guy who has 30 plate appearances in the big leagues to his name, and then you let your starting catcher who can't hit, It doesn't make any sense to me.
Yep. No, I understand what you're saying. Just to play devil's advocate very briefly, one thing is Kirk was DHing because Eduardo Rodriguez was on the mound and they wanted as many righties in the game as possible. And Kirk's hitting 148. Like, everybody loves Alejandro Kirk, right? He was great last year, 9-for-24, 4-hit game against the Yankees, et cetera, et cetera. He hasn't been that Kirk yet this year. I still think he's a better hitter right now than Danny Jansen is, and I still would have done it a different way. I don't think, as you said about leading the witness, I think you presented the prosecution's case there 100%, and I think there are a couple of mitigating factors, the ones that I just mentioned, but I still would have pinch hit for Jansen. Now, if Kirk gets on, you've got a base clogger, but it's a 2-run game, not a 1-run game. The idea is to get somebody on base and get the tying run to the plate. You're at that stage of the game in the 8th inning. So it did strike me as curious. I'm sure it was discussed. I generally am driving. I don't go on the post-game Zooms. I'm driving home at that time. I don't know if it was asked of Charlie. I watched the post-game Zoom this morning, so I'll find out. Maybe he will be asked today. It does strike me. It does strike me that it could have been done a different way. It's not the big reason they won the game. I mean, let's look. They're bringing Josh Palacios up as a pinch hitter too, right? Like that's a whole different thing. I like that they brought Rowdy up when they did. That was kind of a proactive move to get Rowdy in and leave him in the game and that thing, but that sort of thing. But I would have done it differently. I would have done it the way that you said.
Are we at the point now where it was Vladdy, you know, show us what you have and then we'll move you to the third base, to now where it's like, we need you to play third because that's a hole in our lineup?
It's a fascinating conversation, and I think it's going to be a long, passionate conversation by many people within the organization, fans, media, and everybody. It's a good question. It kind of depends. On the one hand, he's looking really good, I think, really comfortable at first. And I think he's got a higher ceiling at first, probably, than he does at third. But he's gotten much better. On the other hand, you saw him come in and make that play on the foul ball last night. He looked great, looked absolutely great, and looked excited to make a play on a ball that I think he knew was foul off the bat. But he still went after it. But it might come back to the hitting. Like if Rowdy Tellez gets hot, I mean hot, and you want him in the lineup every day, and if Gurriel is still struggling and, say, he becomes the odd man out, you know, that changes the equation. If Biggio starts hitting or he doesn't, that changes the equation. I think right now they're going to ease their way into it situationally, see what happens when Springer and Teoscar come back, see who their best nine are. If they feel their best nine doesn't include Biggio, and maybe Vladdy goes over to third more and one of the outfielders DHs. But I think for now it'll be an occasional thing, but I wouldn't completely close the door on his usage at third base increasing.
We'll leave it there, Dan. Always enjoy the chat. We'll do it again next week. And with another game in Boston, three against the Rays in Tampa Bay, Gibby's old house of whores, as he used to call it. And with the Washington Nationals in Dunedin next week, there'll be some interesting developments over the next number of games, and we'll chat about them next Wednesday. Thanks, pal.
Absolutely, guys. Have a great day. Thanks.
Dan Shulman, the play-by-play voice of the Blue Jays on Sportsnet, brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit donvalleynorthlexus.com. Stewie and Bourne tomorrow morning. Kevin Barker for a half hour tomorrow morning. And very quickly, Hugh, breaking news.
Yeah, Arash Madani is tweeting out that the CFL's Board of Governors is holding a meeting today. It's looking like the season might be postponed, but we'll know more as the day goes on.
And we will break it all down at 6 o'clock tomorrow morning. Good shows next. Stay safe in the snow.
Pets' heads are falling off.